Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's conference call. Today is Monday, September 18th, 2017. Jan, am I coming through? Testing 1, 2.
Yes, I hear you fine.
Thanks.
You're coming through, John.
Thank you. Okay, we broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, 781-838-3728. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, @nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We're in Matthew chapter 16. We'll read 1 through 12. It's Matthew chapter 16, verses 1 through 12. The Pharisees also with the Sadducees came and tempting desired him that he would show them a sign from heaven. He answered and said unto them, when it is evening, you say it'll be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. O ye hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. A wicked and an adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall be no sign be given unto it but the sign of the prophet Jonah. And he left them and departed. And when the disciples were come together on the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. Then Jesus said unto them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. And they reasoned among themselves, saying, it's because we have taken no bread. Which when Jesus perceived, he said unto them, O ye of little faith, why reason ye among yourselves because ye have brought no bread? Do ye not yet understand, neither remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets ye took up? Neither the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many baskets ye took up? How is it that ye do not understand that I spake it not to you concerning bread, that ye should beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? Then understood they how that he bade them not beware of the leaven of the bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. When Jesus came unto the coasts, I'm sorry, we're going to stop right there. The doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. All right, that was Matthew chapter 16, verses 1 through 12. All right, before we discuss tonight's topic, Jen, do we have any calls or any announcements? Any questions or any announcements?
Yes, I have 2 questions tonight. The first one is, does the common law grand jury submit their findings to a judge for the judge to issue a writ to the sheriff for execution?
Ask that question again. Do we submit what?
Does the common law grand jury submit their findings to a judge for the judge to issue a writ to the sheriff for execution?
We don't have a judge. We have a magistrate in the court. We asked for a magistrate. They did give us a magistrate. And the judge, of course, or the magistrate, shall I say, can't make any decisions of themselves. They're to administer the court. So, if we make a motion for default or something of that nature, we then write up the paperwork and give it to the judge for his signature and seal, as well as our signature and seal, because we're in there acting as the people through the grand jury. in this particular court of record that we have opened up here in federal court. We have filed some papers, and he has not signed those papers, but we recently refiled some papers, and we also added those same papers that he didn't sign before, but we recently sent some papers in concerning his lack of action, and has given him so many days, I forget what it was, I think it was 20 days we gave him to respond and to do his duty. So that's kind of where we're at. I don't know if there was a specific question further than that, but that's pretty much how we're handling at this point. Did I answer that question, do you think, Jen? Because I thought last week we spoke about this, or the week before when we filed that paper.
Well, I guess the question really is, does the sheriff execute
once we get the papers, once we get the papers, then we would give it to the sheriff, and we would move the sheriff forward with the papers. But first, we'd have to have the signature from the judge. You know, we can go to the clerk to get a signature, but we have a magistrate in the court. I think it's a much better and much more powerful and much more obvious if you get the administrator of the court to sign it, which is the magistrate.
Okay, so although the magistrate doesn't have any authority other than to sign that writ, it goes through him and then to the sheriff, right?
Right. The magistrate can't make any decisions in the court. He only administrates the decisions of the court. Of course, you know, as far as court hearings, we would have to have a jury involved at that point in time and also a prosecutor.
Okay, second question. A book by Walter Anderson called A Treatise on the Law of Sheriff says, for the justification of the refusal of the sheriff to execute a writ or process delivered to him, it must be absolutely void, and this must appear in some manner upon the face of the process itself. Differently stated, it is the duty of the sheriff to execute all process emanating from a court having jurisdiction of the subject matter, irrespective of any defects, actual or alleged, in the antecedent proceedings. The question is, who can terminate the decision of the grand jury?
Nobody.
Right.
That's a pretty simple answer. There's nothing more to that. When a grand jury makes a decision as an indictment or information or whatever it is, it's final. When a trial jury makes a decision, it's final. No question. Nobody can question it. It's done.
Okay, that's all the questions that I have for tonight.
All right, do we have anybody that has to make any announcements or bring us up to date on anything?
Well, Ollie, is Ollie in here yet? He had some interesting information come up here just a little bit ago.
He should be. I heard his voice earlier.
Yeah, I thought I heard him earlier. Where'd you go,
okay,
Ollie?
Okay, we are in Q&A, so Ollie, if you can get into the Q&A, hit *6. Anybody who wants to ask a question or make a comment, *6 to get into the Q&A. Ollie, hit *6, you'll get into the Q&A. Unless you can scroll down and find him.
No, I'm looking for him at the moment here. It's difficult. Whoops, there he is.
Right, he's in the chat right now. He's in the... Yep. Let me get him. He's in the Q&A. Go ahead, Ollie. You should be unmuted.
Hello. This is very interesting. On Facebook, about an hour ago, somebody shared a post from a gal up in Montana, and she's with the Patriot Movement. She is tickled pink, and she says that Karen Bud Phelan very possibly might be the new BLM director. She had a link to her. Karen Bud Phelan, as it turns out, is a senior partner of a law firm in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And looking at her, and looking at the link, she has battled for grazing rights. She has sued certain employees of the BLM. she would be a perfect BLM director, and go to if you'll go to let me get this link. Maybe I give a verbal URL. It's budfalen.com, budfalen.com/people/Karen dash Bud dash Phelan. And now this is very exciting. If she would be the perfect BLM director, and Terry was reading something that some liberal was said he had three reasons why she should be the BLM director. And one of his reasons was she's a Bundy supporter. And he also said that she was representing the Bundys at the Vegas trial, which I don't think she is, but she would be tearing them apart. But that's about it. And this would be major. It would be major if she took over as director of the Bureau of Land Management. It would. We would have a friend on our side. Of course, like I was telling Jen, it would take her 17 years to weed out all the Daniel P. Loves and all the Obama holds out and this and that. But if she took over the BLM, it would be major. That's it.
Okay, thanks. Anybody else, Jen?
No, but kind of on the same vein, there's a rumor going around again on Facebook, I think it was, no, DC Clothesline, that Daniel P. Love is tossed out of the BLM.
Yeah, he's been fired.
Yeah.
Who fired him?
Whoever runs the BLM, I guess.
Well,
I haven't watched the video yet.
Hmm.
Wouldn't that be too bad?
All right, is that it? Is that it?
Yep, that's all I've got tonight, John.
Okay. All right, talk about something we're thinking of doing, and I'm pretty sure we're going to do this. We need everybody's assistance in doing this. Started talking about this a few days ago. We had a meeting with some of the leadership, and we're going to try to go forward with a campaign for sheriffs. We have 3,134 counties, therefore we should have 3,134 sheriffs. We do know that there's a small number of counties, maybe, I don't know, 30 or 40 counties at most, I would imagine, that do not have sheriffs for one reason or another. But generally there's over 3,100 sheriffs. And, of course, every sheriff has deputies. It has been our experience from sending information to sheriffs, talking to sheriffs, both on the phone and also in person, it has been our experience that they are extremely ignorant to the Constitution. No different than us. I speak to myself first. All of us were ignorant not long ago to many of the things we've come to not become knowledgeable over the past years. And, many of us didn't know the Constitution, didn't understand really what liberty really is. We may have thought we understood what freedom is. Freedom in general is liberty, but it's much more than that. But in any event, because of their ignorance, we have tried many different things to talk with sheriffs. We did a lot of faxing. A lot of our papers, it's very difficult. You get a page or two or three or ten, if we copied the sheriff some of our paperwork. We perceived that many of these sheriffs didn't understand it. They'd see it as legal papers, call the county attorney or something, and they would say, these people are crazy, don't worry about it. So we never really got any good leverage. I'm sure we did get some with some, because we did get some responses, but they were very, very minimum, just a few. Somehow, some way, we need to connect with the sheriffs. Now, we are working with the committees of safety. We're working with the information and necessary tools for the people to get committees of safety started within their counties. And everybody should really work to get a committee of safety going. One of the key things that the committee of safety is to do is to educate the sheriff, you know, to connect with the sheriff, get a relationship with the sheriff, and start feeding that sheriff some information and start to empower the sheriff, but also educate him to a point where he begins to realize and understand what his real role is. Right now, there are very few sheriffs, in my opinion, that know what their real role is. Very, very few. So we have been thinking or talking about writing a book directly for sheriffs for a little while. A few days ago, maybe, I don't know, 5-6 days ago or something, I forget, but started writing this book for sheriffs. I got quite a bit of information, and I've collected a lot of information over the years, and so I got a lot of data that I can put in and put it in the necessary form. But the key point of the book is to empower the sheriff. If from the standpoint of National Liberty Alliance, we're a little tainted with the sheriff, maybe, because they may think that we're a little wacko, or, you know, we're extremist, or there are all kinds of things that they may think. And I've heard some sheriffs say some terrible things about us, and they have no idea or clue who or what we are, what we're doing. But in any event, we want to do something that's kind of pure, and put up a... We have Weber URLs, Power... I don't think it's the, but just the word power, powerofthecountysheriff.com. And we also have powerofthecountysheriff.net. If you were to put that into your web browser, you would go to one of our pages that talks directly to the sheriff. What we want to do is create a website similar to the one we have for NLA, in the sense of it being interactive, where we could gather membership, we can create an educational process on it. We've got two courses, our civics course and our constitutional course. We can put that onto the sheriff's site. In the process of writing the book, alongside that book, we will be creating another course specifically and especially for sheriffs. And what we want to do is start out by getting the sheriffs the copies of these books, mailing them directly to them. So this is a pretty big project if we can move it along. In any event, the idea at first was to write a pretty beefy or meaty book, you know, with a lot of information and detail. But as I was putting this together over the past days or so, I come to realize that maybe what we really need is not necessarily a beefy book, but really a book really that will guide the sheriff, something that he could stick in his pocket, just like a pocket constitution or a pocket juris book, but something directed directly to him, written directly for the sheriff, starting off with his duty and his oath and what the law is. Putting in lots of quotes. In other words, there's not going to be anything we're going to put in this book or say in this book that we don't back up with the facts, with through, you know, footnotes, where this information comes from. We want to create a book that is powerful, that's going to capture the sheriff immediately on the first couple of pages and realize, hey, this book is something that is going to benefit me. And so we want to impress that the sheriff with knowledge, ultimately. And we don't want to try to shape his opinion on certain subjects in the sense that, you know, there is a conspiracy. We don't want to get into conspiracies. But I think after he would get through the book, I think there would be some contradictions, and the contradictions would not favor what's in the book, but favor what they thought in their mind. Providing we can really put this book together in a way that really brings all the facts together to bear. That's one of the things. We want to empower the sheriff. Sheriffs don't know the difference between being a code enforcer or a law enforcer. Sheriffs will go to a lawyer for interpretation of part of the Constitution. Particularly, we're talking about the Bill of Rights, which is really what the sheriff should be focused in on, making sure that people's unalienable rights are not violated by anyone within the court or anyone within government. And that really, he's a law enforcement officer, not a code enforcement officer. But we want to make it clear that there is a difference between the two, what statutes are, what the law is, and let the Supreme Court speak to him by using Supreme Court rulings and conclusions. Let the judges of the Supreme Court speak to the sheriff concerning the interpretation of some of these things. Also, of course, our founding fathers who've written much, and we can use a lot of their quotes in order to build our case on the power and the authority of the county sheriff. And we have a lot to tell him that he or she has no clue that they have the power or the authority to do certain things. And again, they may think that they're keeping their oath, but I doubt there are many sheriffs in America. I'm sure there may be a few, but few would be the key. That really truly are keeping their oaths. The key is to try to make these people come to realize that they have not been keeping their oaths, and they haven't been doing it because of ignorance, and that it's not too late to make a change and do the right thing. So we really want to focus in on something educational and a book that will grip hold of the sheriff, and also, of course, the sheriff would then hand these books over to the deputies to make sure that they're educated in the same fashion, because after all, they're out as an extension of the sheriff. Every deputy is an extension of the sheriff. Now, again, at first I was thinking about a book more beefier, something maybe a soft cover book, I don't know, but something a little thick, a couple of hundred pages, 300-400 pages, I don't know. But then I thought about the cost factors of that, trying to get the information to every deputy and so on. And then we realized we could do this in a pocket handbook. So a pocket handbook that we put out before was about 43 pages, 45 pages, something like that. This would probably be twice the thickness, so it would be about 80 pages. I believe in 80 pages, we can really get everything in there that the sheriff needs to basically know, and also put it together in such a fashion that there would be an index in the front where, the sheriff could quickly thumb through the index and, review, a page here, a page there on a particular subject. So with a booklet like that, we then could afford potentially of sending 20 books, 20 pocket handbooks to each of the sheriffs in every county. And we also will put together a website, which on this book, it'd be directed to a website for further education and information. And again, I think we'll use the name that we've already got, powerofthecountysheriff.com and .net. On that sheriff's page, we will just focus in on things for the sheriff, nothing else. We'll put the civics course up there. We'll create a membership in order to take any of our courses. They'd have to become a member. We'd give them a lot of information. Ali had put something together on a website, which he shared with me today. It has a map. And on that map, if you highlight a state, you'll get the Sheriff's Association for that state, and we'll let it take you right to that website. There was another link in there on each state, which you click on the county, and you get all the counties for that state. And there was a third link on those states. I forget what that was. Ali, if you're still on mute, if you're still open, got an open mic, maybe you might want to pipe what that third one was. I forget. But anyway.
Am I on?
We can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was my original website. I was working on what, a year or two ago, and I was going to have an admin in each state calling all the sheriffs and asking them questions and telling people how to deal with their sheriff, how to talk to them. And that, now I never got that off the ground, but that site could be modified.
What was the third one on that map? You had a map there, and when you highlight the state, you give you the county information, the sheriff's association information, and something else. There was a third item.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. There was that site that I was working on where I was going to have an admin in each state, and they were going to call county organizers and people in each county and put them in a database and tell them how to talk and deal with their sheriffs. I never did get that off the ground. However, for a sheriff's website, you know, I could give Carl a template of the site and he could modify it, and it would be a good start for your sheriff's website.
Well, we definitely would like to take the map and all the information on that, maybe even add some other information that would be important to the sheriff on that map for their state. And so we'll talk about that later. But let me get back to
it. I put a lot of work in this. I'd like to see it up and running sometime. So, okay, later.
Okay, appreciate it. All right, anyway, that's kind of what we're thinking to doing is, again, creating this website solely and specifically for sheriffs, giving them the education. The book, which we may name The County Sheriff, I don't know. We may name it The Power of the County Sheriff. That makes sense because we have the website, so maybe the name of the book should be The Power of the County Sheriff. And then the website for the information is powerofthecountysheriff.com or .net. But the key thing here, that book, we would create a test out of it. So that we would put it up on the website, and we'd let the people know, you know, the sheriff know. Well, in the book, we'd make the point that the people can go up and take free courses, a course on the power of the county sheriff, a course on a civics course, and a constitutional course. So there'd be three courses right off the bat. We do plan to do more courses, but right now those are the three. We would put them directly on the website. People who are the sheriffs and deputies would be members. We'll have probably a membership for people who might want to join just for support, but we'll identify them in a different fashion. I can't think of the appropriate name, associate member or something like that. I don't know. But we'll figure that out. We'll call him something. But basically, if it's the sheriff, he'd have his label. His name would be sheriff. He'd be the member as sheriff, whatever his name is. And if he was a deputy, he would be a deputy, whatever his name is or her name is. And they would be on the website, which would be private, of course, to the sheriffs. Anyone who is a sheriff would have access to the courses. They'd be able to look up their state, their county, and be able to see if their deputies are taking the course, what courses they're at what level are they at, if they completed. We're going to potentially offer, certificates of completion, certificates for each of these courses. On the website, we will have, that's the basic education what we want to offer every sheriff, that every sheriff should take those basic information, reading the book, taking those three courses. That's what we'll suggest. But we will give them much more than that. We will give them a list of very important court cases that every sheriff and deputy, especially the ones that want to advance, should be reading and coming to a really good understanding of. I mean, one of the first cases, Marbury versus Madison. A recent case, United States versus Williams. Just to name two of quite a few cases that we do have that we can put up there in PDF form, and these sheriffs, again, could read through this and get a great education. We also have lots of other things that we could put up there. Of course, we would put up the Constitution, a copy of the Constitution. We'd like to get all the state constitutions up there, too, so that'll be a project we'll start pushing on. But we'd like to get all the constitutions up there. We get, of course, the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and, of course, the Declaration of Independence. We also would get up there the Federalist Papers. We've got a lot of books that we could put up there. Again, this site is going to be purely educational, but it also will be a place where sheriffs from different states can come together and communicate with each other. We probably will run a weekly open forum for questions for sheriffs and deputies. Of course, that would be open to anyone who would like to come to that call. But basically, it'll be run around. The open forum will be really around questions concerning, you know, the Constitution, the power and the authority of the sheriff, focusing in on the power of the sheriff. We want to put, again, we've got a lot of ideas. This is kind of a general idea of all the information that we'd want to get. We want to get a really reasonably interactive website, and one that where people can leave comments and a discussion board and so on. We can accomplish these. I think we can get the book done in about 2 weeks, a few weeks anyway. Not sure how long, but let's say a few weeks. We can probably get the website up in a few weeks, depending if Carl has the time, because we'll have to ask Carl to really put the framework of the website up there. Once the framework is up there, you know, I and others could start uploading all the necessary information, creating the pages, and put all the time into the creative part of the website once we have it framed out. And I don't know that it's going to take a lot to frame out, but there is some work involved with it, of course. And of course, we can tinker with it over time. But let's say in 30 days, if we can get the book completed, get the website up, we would post the book free of charge to be downloaded as a PDF. We then would put up we'll start this almost immediately on NLA's website, and we will duplicate the information over into the new website, sort of like a thermometer looking for a certain amount of money in order to get this project off the ground, explain what this project is, and just keep a track of the money coming in. Now, I've estimated in order to get this project going, getting 20 books to every sheriff in the nation, and putting all this together is probably close to 100,000. So somewhere between 75,000 and 100,000. 75,000 seems about right. We might go with the 100,000 mark. The question was brought up. Well, what if we don't get to that place where we want to get to, and the funds, you know, in order to raise enough funds to get this project off the ground? Well, we will have the website up. We will have the book up. And we'll have, of course, membership open for the sheriffs and so on and so forth. But we would, if we lack the book and unable to get the money, the funds to be able to create the book, maybe it'll just take longer. Maybe it'll take a year to get it done. But I think if we can get those people who are active particularly and others who aren't active here in NLA, we put out some flyers. We'll post some flyers maybe. And it'll be very simple flyers. And telling the story of what we're doing to try to empower the sheriff. We also want to make a connection between the Committees of Safety and the sheriff. We want to explain to the sheriff the importance of the Committee of Safety. Of course, we can also direct the sheriff to where he could, well, we could probably mirror the information on our Committees of Safety, where there are Committees of Safety, what's, you know, by state and county, and put them over onto our site. We might be able to mirror a few other things from our site over there, so that these sheriffs will understand that, you know, Committee of Safety is very important to them. This is their local constituents. These are the people that are active, that want to empower the sheriff, that wants to see the sheriff to become knowledgeable and to do his duty, his true duty, which is a law enforcement officer. But getting back into the book, we would detail all of the appropriate work that the sheriff has to do. We'll put a section there probably on marshals, U.S. marshals. I don't want to get too deep into that subject at the moment, but U.S. marshals play an important role as a sheriff inside federal courts and inside federal buildings. And I got to talk with a few people concerning prisons, and we'll make some points on prisons, but we'll lay that aside for now. So the book is really important to go out, to get books into the hands of the sheriff, a book that is gripping, a book that really is laid out in such a way that, you know, once the sheriff would read one or two and even three pages, that it would be gripping enough and realize the importance of the book and the meat of the matter and want to go through the whole book. So we want to definitely do that. And we want to, again, have the book available for free for anyone from downloading. But, again, our membership is what's going to require to get this going. If we create flyers and everybody says, just takes the flyer and runs off whatever they think they need, 20 flyers, 50 flyers, 100 flyers, whatever. If you go to an event, a Liberty event, you go to a Liberty meeting, you pass these flyers out to get these people to the website for the sheriff, and which will then tell the story of what the purpose of the site was and what our mission, what our goal is, and what we're trying to do. Word of mouth is the key, and if we can get 100 people with NLA, really, that would buckle down and say, okay, I'm going to put some time into this to try to get the word out, to get people to donate, to come out and help support this movement. I mean, literally, people could hit the streets to try to get people to support this movement. You know, go out to the website, read what we're doing. We could do a bullet point on the flyer, which will basically give a reasonably good understanding of what our plan is. Because, look, if we can get a constitutional sheriff in every county or most counties, and their sheriffs in order, all and educate them, things would be very different. And not only would they be very different, not only in the courts and many other places, the way government is treating the people, and they would be able to recognize the violation, the constitutional violation of the way they're treating the people. Not only would it change there, Sheriff Mack says, that the sheriff is the last line of defense. And we will take some of the information that Sheriff Mack has put together concerning the last line of defense, or we'll write something up ourselves. We'll get his permission to put some of this info on the website. Or we'll just write our own points and reasoning why, you know, sheriff is the last line of defense. Anybody who understands the serious problems with the New World Order, or whatever you want to call it, the deep state, they will realize the necessity of this. Anybody in the Liberty Group should realize the necessities of this. But there'll be another sort of hook for the people in these flyers, especially for the Liberty Group people, the people who are awakening or have awakened. And that is the COS. We want to pump the COS, the importance of the people to get involved with their sheriff on that level. So not only do we want to educate them from one position, we want to have them educated also from the people, through the COS, the Committees of Safety, that we're trying to initiate in every county across America. We are looking for ideas on how to raise money. You know, we've had some people come with some ideas, but we need somebody, people with ideas. And the people, whatever ideas you bring up, we're going to ask those people to participate, to help us to, build on those ideas, to try to execute a plan, a way to raise money here or raise money there. But we need everybody working on this if we're going to do it. So what I'd like to say is, from now until we're going to run a little late before we move over to Brent, but I want to focus in on an open forum just for a little while. When anybody that has questions concerning what we're doing, ideas of what we're doing, particularly ideas, hopefully everything will be positive, people will be excited about this, but particularly ideas on how we can raise money. But again, I want to get onto the website, sort of like a thermometer, which would put on the mount what our goal is and then show how much we collect as time goes on. And that's something we would mirror back and forth. We'd have it both on the NLA site and on the sheriff's site. But everything would always be directed to the sheriff's site. We're not going to connect directly the sheriff's site with NLA. Some sheriffs may have a bad idea about who we are, as National Liberty Alliance or as the Common Law Grand Jury, because they've been tainted by county attorneys and others, but particularly lawyers who have said, don't worry about those people. And then they haven't read our papers, and they were poisoned to think that we're wackos and lost in fiction or whatever the case may be. So because of that, we want to totally separate it. It'll be a website totally all on its own. Now, we will have a place where we will list out Liberty groups, okay, where people who are supporting this movement, we'd ask for them to give a donation supporting this movement, and we would then post their name up there. But we would first have to go through an approval process. We don't want any wacko groups putting their names up on our site, which takes people down the wrong road. So we would do put an approval system up there and approve them. And then if they're approved, if they want to give us a donation, we'll put it up. Maybe we'll make it a minimum of $100 donation to put their website up on our website. We will have, well, of course, NLA will be up there in a prominent manner. But there'll be no real connection in the sense crossover from one to the other, with a few exceptions. In the writing, when we're writing on the pages and giving out information or different things, anything that we can't mirror over that we might want to send over into our website, we would do it. I think we might be able to mirror over the COS pages. And again, that's something I have to talk with Carl about to see if we could do that seamlessly. And just keep the website as pure and focused as possible. Now, again, there will be something on the website here or there talking about the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and we will link over to our site for that, to the appropriate pages. There will be something on the website that will link over to National Liberty Alliance, but again, it may be more prominent than the other liberty groups who would be listed up there, but it wouldn't be something that would really overwhelm in such a way that it affects the purity as what we're trying to get of the sheriff's website. So anyway, that's kind of the framework of the thinking of what we're trying to do, and I'd like to spend a little time before we move over to Brent with people who have thoughts, ideas, or questions concerning that. So anybody in the text chat and in the anybody in the Q&A, if you don't have questions on that matter, maybe you can you know, when we open you up, we'll pass by you and you get back in the end of the line. But I want to focus in on this first and then get to Brent and then open back up the Q&A again. But let's do that first, see if people have ideas, how can we make money to do this thing, and whatever your thoughts are. So we'll take Peter in New York first. You've been unmuted. Go right ahead, Peter.
Hi. How's everybody tonight?
Hi.
A few things I was thinking. We're raising money. Now, there is county budget that we have to put the paperwork in. But there are county budgets for items. Maybe we could find money in different county budgets or state budgets as book resources for sheriffs. Another thing I want to mention is the best time to reach a sheriff would be in his email in the morning when he's sitting at his desk. A quick newsletter, an LA sheriff newsletter with all the nice things that we've been doing at the, you know, we volunteer and at sheriff functions when they're raising money, and we, you know, a couple of us show up. And I mean, I volunteered to cook at their summer barbecue before. There's different things that we can, you know, make nice, the olive branch at their fundraisers, and then have in the newsletter the NLA relationship with the sheriffs. And then, meanwhile, with our morning emails and your contact with them, you know, let them know about the books that you're doing and how we get in touch with their, where they're, who's giving their classes now, and how we get material between the two talking, who gives their classes now to the sheriff's deputies and the police officers.
Right.
So,
well, let me respond to some of that stuff. These are a lot of good ideas. The sheriff newsletter is really a good idea, and I think it's something we'll start. Of course, it'll come from the sheriff's website, not from NLA. We want to kind of separate everything from this website and purify it just for sheriffs. And again, you know, there could be associate members if you would, I'm not sure what you would call them. Maybe that's what we would call them, associate members, people who are not sheriffs but wants to be a member. Those members, we might require a membership fee for the sole purpose of you know, really as a donation to help the cause. So we may do that, and people can then become associate members, which the benefit of that would be that they would be able to take the courses to begin with. And I'm sure there may be some other benefits. They'll get the newsletter, and there may be some other benefits that we can make sure that they get so that it would be worthwhile. But the key thing is that they're given money for the sole purpose of helping to get this off board. But let me just make something a little more clearer. Our contact to get our sheriffs to our website will be really coming from three different directions. First and foremost, they'd receive in the mail free books. We're thinking of 20 books per sheriff for places where there's a lot more deputies than let's say 19. They can request more books and we'll send it to them for free. But we would send out 20 books with a letter introducing the purpose of the book and also making a note concerning the website. Of course, the website would also be embedded in numerous places in the book because we'd be talking for further education in this or more of an understanding of that. You know, we'll refer to documents that are actually on the sheriff's website, which will bring them to the website. And we'll also introduce them to the membership, and we'll talk to them about the courses, the free membership, the free courses for purpose of education, so on and so forth. But the first focus and the first connection and the first, sort of foot in the door with the sheriff is the book. The book has got to be impressive. Again, it's got to be really a pretty book. It's got to have a nice, really dynamic front page. And the first page very particularly needs to be powerful, something drawing with something that hits the sheriff and says, wow, you know. And I would think after that, at least the first two or three pages, again, have to be very drawing. So far, what I've been putting together, in my opinion, every page is drawing. It's looking forward to the next part, to the next part, to the next part.
More The only fear is that book form doesn't get their attention, and possibly a morning email, and they click on a short video where you
read
exactly
what's in the book. Well, we will do those kind of things, but see, what we're trying to do is this. If the book doesn't catch their attention, then maybe the people at a county better really seriously start thinking about getting rid of their sheriff, because it's a free book that is giving them the authority and the power of the county sheriff. And again,
I feel it's excellent that they have it on their desk, in their hands.
Right.
If
we can get behind that, okay, let's say for the places where there are COSs, Committees of Safety in a county, or maybe there's a place where you have some active people in the county that wants to create the COS, wants to make contact with the sheriff, we can create something and help them to be able to make first contact with the sheriff for the benefit of working with the sheriff, of course, but also getting them to the website. But first, the first introduction we want to do is for these free books. And it'll be an impressive book. If you think about the book, inside this book, in the back of the book, we will also have, it'll be a constitutional handbook also, because we'll have the U.S. Constitution, we will have the Bill of Rights, we will have the Declaration of Independence, and we may have a few other things, a couple of pages of different things of that type of documents. But that would be in the back of the book. There'd be an index. It would be seen in the index. It's there. But we want to start off with, who the sheriff is and what their oath is and what their power, what their authority, what their purpose is. And some history of the sheriff, at some point in the book. We don't want to do that too quickly, because the history of the sheriff, in my opinion, is not as exciting as the meat of what we're trying to offer these people. Now, if the book, the book, again, is a handbook, a pocket handbook, twice the thickness of what we had for the for our jurist book, and twice the thickness of what these constitutional booklets are. Matter of fact, maybe three times the thickness of the constitutional handbooks. But it'll be a little beefy in thickness, but it'll be sizable. They can stick it in their top shirt pocket. And every sheriff and every deputy should have one. The website is the support. What I had learned a long time, but again, I'm not knocking your ideas. I think your ideas have to come behind it. Okay, the book has to be the first introduction.
Because I enjoy your voice so much, John. I think a morning briefing, if you just had them click on a hyperlink, and there's a morning briefing that just like you write a paragraph. I love the way you write. And you just read it. That would grab them more in the morning when they're having a cup of coffee, because I know that the book is a necessary thing, that they should have it, they can speak to it, and it's a tool to be used. But that morning that you were talking about, touching them and getting their attention, it's just like the rest of us that are in business. You sit at the desk, you open up your emails, you're going through, you only have a second to go through your emails, boom, you click on a hyperlink, and here, John, you for about 3-4 minutes, say some poignant things that need to be said, and then how to get to the websites and whatever, and that you will continue to send them a newsletter. And so it's that foot in the door, a nice meeting with your voice, and then let them know that when you see our newsletters, please read them. We're trying to get a close relationship with you. And then I'll yield.
Right. I took a note. That is a good idea, a morning briefing. We'd have to put a program together and make sure we have enough messages that'll run 100 days or something, and then again work on more and continue it. Once you get something like that going, you don't want to stop it. So I kind of like that idea. The Sheriff newsletter, again, great idea. Two things that you brought up, and I don't know that we can tap into this, and that is trying to get some money from a county budget or a state budget. I don't know how we would go about it. I know how we can do something of that nature for other purposes, but not for this
grant?
Purpose.
Maybe a grant?
Unless you know, huh? What was that?
Does anybody know how to write grants? Maybe there's a grant process that we could get, $100,000.
Yeah, that would be nice, a grant. You know, also there are websites we can go on asking for money for a project. But grants, let me make a note of that. If anybody has any knowledge of grants that would like to assist us on how to do that. Also, some of these websites where you put up and ask for money and you tell them your project and people give money, I don't know what they would call them, but I'll make a note that it's a website introduction on a project, seeking funds. Okay, so if anybody knows that and how that works and can help us tap that in, that would be good. So those are two possible ways.
John.
And so you've given us a lot of great ideas. I do have notes on them, and we're going to have a meeting which will be brainstorming these things. When's that meeting going to be, Jan? Is that Thursday at 2 o'clock, was it?
2 o'clock. 2 o'clock,
okay,
yes.
Thursday at 2 p.m., it's the afternoon. Anybody that would like to be at that meeting, right here in this room, we're going to be doing more brainstorming, putting things together, hopefully getting committees together, and, maybe we'll do a phone call thing, all kinds of things. I do have probably maybe 75%, maybe more, email addresses of the sheriffs. We had collected that quite some time ago, and I do have an email program that can send out all those emails. So we could do an email, a newsletter quite quickly, and we can identify ourselves in that email as, the power of the county sheriff. But I'm kind of thinking we want to get the book and the website up, obviously, first before we do the email, the newsletters. And the book, which we would let them know, make a note in it that we're taking a campaign right now to send to sheriffs copies of these pocket handbooks. But they're available for download immediately. They can go right to the website and download it in a PDF form. Wouldn't be something that they can stick in their top pocket, but I guess they could roll it up and fold it up and stick it in their top pocket. But it would be quite thicker because it would be larger font, bigger pages. But so that'll be available. Maybe in the next 2 weeks we can push on the newsletter and that kind of stuff. So a lot of good ideas. Anything else, Peter?
No, that's it tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
appreciate
John,
that.
John?
Yes?
Could I add a comment on that?
Sure.
I would like to heartily endorse his idea of just a short, brief movie or a DVD, video, whatever you want. About 50 years ago, I was giving a briefing to the Submarine Development Group 2 up in New London, Connecticut. And the Admiral came in at the start of the briefing. I was about probably an hour-long briefing. And he knew that I had a little 5-minute movie in there on scale model submarines. And he didn't want to sit through the whole briefing, but before he left, he said, "Now, I want you to stop when you come to the movie. You come and get me because I want to watch the movie," and so on. So he went away. We got to the point 25 minutes later about where the movie was supposed to go on. We stopped. We went and got the Admiral. He came in, watched the movie, smiled a lot, went away. That's the way you get their attention. It's something quick, easy. He doesn't have to read it. All he has to do is sit there and listen and watch. It's a great way to get the people like that. And the sheriffs have a little time, like he says, a cup of coffee. Give them a little movie, a little DVD. I think it's a great idea.
Okay, so let's say a 5 or 10 minute PowerPoint video. We could put that on our front page, and I don't know whether we could. But I do have a CD or DVD writer. You know, I can produce quite a few of them. They do it quite quickly. But matter of fact, we did that before with the sheriffs. We sent them out CDs. Or I think it was the sheriffs we sent CDs to. I don't remember. We sent a lot of them. And matter of fact, I know it was the sheriffs. But we could do DVDs, which we'd send them out also with. We can create those DVDs and send them out with the books. But we can put it in the newsletter and make a note when they come, and when they get to the website, they can see a PowerPoint 5-minute. We'd have to do something dynamic, something interesting. You know, we have to find the right look, the right feel, the right color. And I'm sure we could do that. We can be creative with that. So I got a note for that, a 5-minute PowerPoint video. What we will be doing on Thursday, one of these things, is trying to get committees to take up some of these things and come together with the ideas and bring materials together for the creation of this or that or the other thing. Let's start constructing the process. And we'll see where we go. All right, anything else, John?
Yes, Robert would like to say a few words on this topic, too, I guess. I'll unmute him.
Robert, go right ahead. Did you unmute him?
No.
Hey, Robert.
Yeah, did you hear me?
No. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, John, just bring you up to speed a little bit. As you might know, I think you do, I don't know for sure, but there's been a group of us in the Liberty Movement, and LA is prominently represented by several of us. We've been meeting. We've been meeting with some sheriffs. We've also, on our public forum, amongst a closed group, there will be some members of the bar. There'll be some members of the court system, and there'll be some ministers. And we, as students of the Constitution, will be asking the questions, and they will be answering. Also, some of our questionnaires are going to be going out to colleges to teach the Constitution, and also to some that teach the law. Or rather, should I say, the bar. So things are getting interesting. My trip in the next 2 weeks will be a 4-hour trip one way to meet with a group. And some of them will be out of state. But we're to the point where they are aware of NLA. We have presented some of our booklets, mainly the Constitution and the book handbook for sheriffs, bailiffs, and also the way I think from personal experience in this last endeavor, which has been going on with this group for about 8 months, the shorter, the better. I do not know, usually, from talking with these folks, meaning sheriffs, usually they have a radio room or their main point of communication is usually associated to some little private room And I have never been into a private sheriff's room where the sheriff has taken the military flag off and down and has installed the 50-star flag of the United flag for the United States of America on a wooden pole and a wooden stand. I find that very interesting. And that tells you a lot about what is going on in this person's mind. I won't give any more information than that. I will talk to you, John, privately. But that's all I'm going to say for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Okay, let's go take our next caller. Let's see. We had Robert on. Robert, oh, yeah, you've already spoken, right, Robert? Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Well, am I Robert? You are Michigan Robert, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's go to Greta from Michigan also. Am I Greta?
Yeah, hey, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you.
Okay, good, good. I just wanted to say that I hear you guys frequently speaking about the sheriffs and all of the connection and the wonderfulness that's going to come from all of that. And I, you know, I truly want to feel the same way you guys obviously feel about that, but my perspective is a far cry different from what I have witnessed firsthand out of the sheriff's office in Flint, Michigan. I'm here to say they're as corrupt as the judge sitting on the bench, straight up. And so with that being stated, I'm simply saying, and not trying to be, you know, a negative Nelly over here, but I don't know how to get the warm and fuzzy feeling that you guys seem to have for all the sheriffs and whatever it is you expect them to be doing on our behalf. Perhaps I'm just naive and I'm probably beyond naive, but what I've seen, I kid you not. I mean, the same sheriffs that witnessed and made reports were the same sheriffs that the judge used to falsely incarcerate me. Civil contempt of court, indefinite incarceration. Do those two terms belong in the same sentence?
Well,
wow.
You know, we do. I do understand what you're saying, and you know, I see a major problem just like you do. We came into this somewhat naively. We thought that we'd find judges. We haven't found judges. We thought we'd find some people in different levels of government, and we haven't. We have found a couple, but we really haven't found many. And I do know that there's corruption in the sheriff's office as much as anything else. I'm hoping that a lot of the corruption is just corruption out of ignorance, and hopefully this book will enlighten them. You know, the way we're trying to write this book is going to be in a fashion, in a way of the fact they're going to have to answer to a higher power at some point in time. We all do, okay? And so that's going to be a sort of a flavor in the book that we want to kind of push forward on, the fact that we all have to become accountable. You know, at the end of our lives, at the end of our careers or whatever, you know, how are we going to feel? Especially if you know the truth. You know, if you're living in ignorance and you're living that way for a long time and then you find the truth and you find the ability of repentance and then to make that change, that 180 degree directional change, then now you have a hope and you can make that change. I've recently seen an individual who I've been witnessing to all my life, and they're only 10 years younger than me, and I literally know them since they were a kid. And only the past year, all of a sudden, major. I almost lost hope in this individual. You know, they were just so immoral and so dangerous or damaging to other people and dangerous to other people, you know, in and out of jail, all kinds of problems. But all of a sudden, the past 6 months or so to almost a year, I started to see a change in about a year ago, but the real change in about 6 months. And it's huge, huge. So that could happen to anyone. But here's the key, you know, to really what we we're getting some interference. Greta, can you mute your mic while we're talking, or move your mic away from the speakers or away from the mouth?
Is that better?
Yeah, let's see how that goes. But anyway, you know, here's the key. We have to do what's right, and we're discovering a lot of things we can do that's right. Yeah, they're long shots, some of these things. Look at what we put together with National Liberty Alliance has come beyond the long shot to a real good possibility. We've accomplished great goals. We have a large membership. We have name recognition. We have 150 papers filed in the court. We have pulled together a lot of things and getting the word out, you know. We haven't accomplished the main goal, which is actually to start winning in the court, but we plan on doing that soon. Let's just think of the same thing with the sheriffs. Let us hope that a lot of their really playing games in the politics and playing games and how they interpret the law. It's not their interpretation. They're doing what they're told, what the lawyer tells them to do. That's what they do. What the judge tells them to do. That's what they do. They think that that's what they have to do. Okay? They don't understand that they can thumb their nose at the judge, thumb their nose at the prosecutor and say, no, you're not going to get it. But in order for them to have the power and the authority, the will and the guts to do that, they have to have something to stand on. And it'd be nice to have people behind them, too. If they get a few people behind them and they got the law, the absolute surety of the law under their feet that they can stand upon, then they can step up and stand. And then, look at, once they understand the seriousness of their oath, because I do not believe these people that are taking these oaths, it's just an exercise of the movement of their lips and the sound coming out of their mouth with no meaning whatsoever, because they're taking on this new job. It's got prestige. Their whole focus is someplace else and not on, I'm doing God's duty. I'm doing the people's duty. I'm doing the right thing. You know, that's not where their mind is at. But if we can offer them that mindset, where they can see that mindset, the opportunity to see that mindset. And let's say the sheriff doesn't really see it totally, but gets a piece of it. But then he takes on and he connects with other sheriffs, and they get talking, they got their communications, because we're going to set up a place where they can communicate back and forth with each other. They come to a meeting that we might have once a week. Or they pass out the books to their deputies, too, and the deputies come up and start bringing up different things. And their reaction from the deputy's reaction might change their whole thing, because the deputy is seeing things in a way that the sheriff didn't see. You know, getting the truth out there is the key. And light is the best cleanser for darkness. And faith in the work that we're doing is going to be blessed and expounded upon and win over. You know, I do know how this whole thing is going to end, because I've read the end of the book. I've read the last chapter. And so I know how it's going to end, you know, but what's in between now and then, and you know, how long between now and then, those are two different other questions. But again, you know, it goes back to the tortoise and the hare. You know, the tortoise always looks like it's going to lose, but at the end, it ends up winning, you know?
Good analogy. Hey, listen, I've taken up enough of your time. I appreciate so much you letting me speak, and I agree with you 100%, and I will remain optimistic. I truly am optimistic.
Trust it's that God's going to use
I've seen
it
so much. I've seen so much corruption. It's like, woo. Okay, well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All
right. One final statement, whether we succeed or not, we've done the right thing, and that's really the whole key to the whole thing. And God will use that anyway, one way or another. And we don't have to know how sometimes, but it happens. Okay, let's take our next caller. Let's see. Let me drop Robert, because we had Robert. You're not coming back up again, are you? I don't think so. Okay, let's go to 719 number, 3071, 719 area code.
Yeah,
what's
this
your
is
name and your state.
This is Randy Yarbrough in Colorado.
How you doing, Randy?
Hanging in. My offer is some radio time. if Brent would host the show.
Mm-hmm.
I do a show on KHNC 1360 AM, Johnstown, Denver. We cover from Cheyenne, Wyoming to the south end, or north end of Colorado Springs. And just to get the word about out about NLA, the sheriff's works, I've had Sheriff Mack on over the years. My show's been running for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so throw that out there to you, you and John, you and Brent.
Yeah, we'd be very interested. We do a lot of radio. It's been a while since I've done radio. I do have a couple of radios that I've done interviews on that recently have asked me to come back on, and I've also been invited for a TV show. So I got to start working those things into my into my schedule. If you would call Jan and give him the details, all of your information, contact information, we'll get together and talk. And we'll get Brent, because I know Brent wants to get his message out, and we can get Brent onto that call too. And, we could do something together, Brent and I and Gerard, or we could do it separately, and whatever you want, doesn't matter. But we're interested. So
okay.
Jan's phone number, you'll find him under the directory. Do you have that? Go to our website and click on the directory, and you'll find Jan's name there. Just click directory. He's towards
Jan?
The top. Jan, J-A-N.
Okay.
He's the national coordinator. You'll find him on that page, right? Click on directory and come down just a little bit, and you'll see the national coordinator is Jan.
Okay.
Okay, get his phone number, give him a call, and he'll make the he'll get all your contact information, and he'll coordinate a phone call with all of us, and we'll talk.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Okay, let us take and anybody wants to get into the queue, it's *6 to get into the queue. Let us take a couple more calls, and then we'll move over to Brent for a while. And then we'll come back to an open forum again. But we have next caller is Crystal in Connecticut. How you doing, Crystal? Crystal, you've been unmuted. Go right ahead. Crystal? Okay. One more call for Crystal in Connecticut. You got the mic. All right, we'll take our next caller, and hopefully Crystal will get back into the queue. Jeremiah from California. Go right ahead, Jeremiah.
Hey, you guys. Hope everyone's doing well. I got some kind of good news for everyone. Pretty good. I had the recent discovery of the impact of making a claim of the precinct number, and I was going to ask you, because of the common law character of the precinct, right, and where in its origins as it relates to 100 court English common law or 100 courts, and my question is, do you think we could use that in place of the federal zip code, in other words, because if you think about it, the federal zip code is really like a location thing, but also the precinct is a common law location thing. So it made sense to me earlier, and I wanted to send that message out there to everybody to start. That's there's a possibility, I think, when you identify all of your legal documents, to put the precinct number on there for the direct relationship between the common law community of origin and the authority. So, what do you think, John? Anything there?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I understand how we might use that. I mean, zip codes. You're not thinking of trying to replace the zip codes on mail or anything, right? You're not thinking that.
To replace it?
Yeah.
Well, you don't replace it, but you identify where. You can still use your address for whatever purpose you need, of course. But instead of putting zip code down, yeah, you basically would put your precinct number down instead, because every precinct is.
A lot of people would have problems finding that. Of course,
well,
you can supply that.
It's also. The reason why I'm saying I think it's so important is because I've seen a map of city and county of San Francisco's precinct map, and it has all the different division, you know, subdivisions for the district, for the supervisor districts, police districts, and also the precincts. And there's like over 600 of them. And my precinct number, by the way, is 7844. So if you go on the map of San Francisco precincts, you'll see it, and you'll see exactly where I'm at and where my address is. And this is what I thought was kind of cool. We could use another way of locating us in the common law.
Let me suggest, I understand what you're saying. We do plan on working down into the precinct level, or it may also be called, the precinct I think is also called the election district. We do plan on working down into that. That has been part of our plan for, goodness, 8 or 10 years, because that's where we started off, was on the committeeman process, right down into the precinct, into the election district. And every one of these precincts has a committeeman. That is the process by which we control our political process and by which we choose our individuals that we would support, that the people would support to run for office. Now, people, of course, that can't get the support of the committeeman, if they have the resources, they can support themselves and pay people to do what they needs to be done to get the word out. But we have a whole plan on that and getting back into it. The whole system in the committeeman process, which brings us down into the precinct level, is corrupt. The people on the lower end, of course, when they come in new, it's exciting, and they're involved in the political process for the first time, and it's exciting. Some of them get corrupt, and some of them get frustrated and leave because they see the corruption over time. So the people are really used to, and then just thrown away there. A lot of people are appointed instead of elected. As a matter of fact, all the people, and I would venture to say probably all the people in throughout the whole United States, is probably appointed and not elected. They may appear to be elected, but they're not, and There's a game that they play in order to make it look that way. But anyway,
John, that's a vacuum.
Let me finish, because this is an educational thing that I really want to get people to understand this. And the Committee of Safety, okay, originally created by our founding fathers. Actually, it was probably around before them, but we trace it back to our founding fathers. They used what's called the Committee of Safety, and in that process, they created a new nation. Every one of our founding fathers was a member of the Committee of Safety and was elected by the Committees of Safety in their neighborhood, so to speak, okay, in order to play the role that they played. And so it was the political process that came up right out of the grassroots, right up out of the people. When President Washington was elected, within 6 months to a year, roughly speaking, as far as we can tell by looking at history, the Committees of Safety morphed. The Committees of Safety morphed into what we know as the committeemen. Okay, so they're one and the same. Now, the committeemen of today, the whole system is corrupt. So we move back to the Committees of Safety. At some point in time, the Committees of Safety, we need to teach the people of the Committees of Safety and many other people within the neighborhoods around them to come in and become, when we get back our nation, then to become the committeemen. Now, the committeemen, we will talk about that. We have a lot of information put together for committeemen because that's where we started out. We were in the committeeman process for quite a few years, and we took it into the court process because we saw the corruption. And that's what led us eventually to where we're at today, which is the grand jury process. We realized we're not going to be able to save the nation doing the committeeman process, and there's too many people to try to reach just in one state alone.
Mm-hmm.
In my county, in order to fill all of the precincts in my county, it's 249 committeemen to fill just the one county. So that's quite a bit across the nation. And in trying to get the people on the same page, it's very, very difficult. But we're doing it from a reverse side, coming into the Committee of Safety, which is a process of education and re-educating the people, bringing them back into the connection of government on the grassroots level. And being there on that grassroots level, eventually moved over into the committeeman, which we will then unfold more information as the time, when the time permits for us to do that. Our site's going to have two sides to it. It always was planned this way. This is not something we just came up with. Day one, we planned this, that there would be. Well, day one, we didn't until we understood the judicial part of the side. When we moved there, we realized we had to have two sides of our website. One is political, and one is judicial. And the people must control both. And in order to control the political, we must first control the judicial. And then we saw the power and the common sense and the ability to really get the people started up early on back into the committee man process through the committees of safety. And we learned, that's what we jumped into it as soon as we realized that, hey, the committee of safety, you know, they are the committee men of today or back then, but now they've lost their way. So we're going to reset it. A lot of the committee men that are in the game, so to speak, on the lower level, that are frustrated, realize there's a problem, and they're hanging in for one reason or another. In general, they usually leave unless they become corrupt and they take a higher ranking. But a lot of these people will move over into the system once you empower them and start to explain how the process works and lays out the rules and the bylaws, the true rules and true laws that they need to operate under, a sense of honor, a sense of justice, a sense of mercy, you know, coming in, you know, to do good, you know, and to get rid of the corruption, the payoffs and all that stuff. That's not going to exist once we take control on that level, because we can indict those who try to continue in that fashion. But once we get into the courts, we can win this whole system back literally. In one court case, we can win the entire nation on the federal level. So that has always been part of our plan, and that gets us down to the precinct level. If you've got the committee man process back to the people in the grassroots, which every election district or precinct, whatever you want to call it, has a one committee man, and that committee man has X amount, usually a couple of hundred families, okay, at most, a couple of hundred, 250 I think is the largest, you know, they try to keep it lower. Some have 50 or 60 families, you know, houses that their people that they, you know, are representing as a committee man. And then you have one for each party, so there's two for every election district, one Democrat, one Republican. Some of the other political parties, they have some committee men here or there, but none of them have filled a county or filled anything. It is true that everything's different back to the Republican and Democratic Party.
Quick question.
Once we get that together, hold on, I know I'm lengthy on this, but this is important to get this picture out. Once we get that level, start to move into that level, and those people, okay, we've already rewritten the rules, which both the Democrats and the Republicans in the state of New York, of all the truly elected committeemen came together in a convention in Kingston, New York, and we laid out a new set of rules that both parties adopted. Now, that is valid, and we're going to unfold that the day that we get into the court to win that whole system back and take over the entire state and give it back to the grassroots, back to the people, and train the people. And again, the committees of safety, those people are being already, you know, trained in order, because the process is to go talk to your sheriff, to go talk with all of the elected officials, make sure they're doing the job, encouraging, working with them, looking for the people who are doing good in office, finding new candidates, and so on. And that's what their job would be. And that's really pretty much what the committees of safety is doing. So, but anyway, you get that, and you get on to the level of the election district, and you blanket that across the United States, that process moving. And all of these people within the county working with the grand jury, okay, and the sheriff working with the grand jury working with the sheriff and with the committeeman, getting a message, educating the people. We can send tremendous amounts of booklets that we can get. Then we can get the funding from the county, the funding from the state, to send educational booklets out to the people, we the people, you know, getting them interested in the true political process without the politics, getting them interested in coming to an understanding of the simplicity of the common law and of the Constitution and by what authority they act, and everybody, you know, getting them, and then getting into our educational system where our children should learn. Look, there's no reason for children to go to school any longer than 8 years. In 8 years, if a proper education is given, each one of our children in 8-year period could be above or equal to the college level of today. A 12-year twelve plus a couple of years of college. 16 year education can be gotten in an 8-year period. I know that for a fact because my son, and I've seen other children going to private schools. My son went to a Christian school, and in the second grade, you know, we took him out to homeschool him because my daughter was being homeschooled for reasons, and we figured out let's do him also. But in the second grade, he was already at an eighth grade level. He was reading an eighth grade level. He was comprehending in the second grade. So it could be done. They really keep kids in school in order to really create what they want, and that's a good slave. That's the whole purpose, in my opinion. They don't teach them civics. They don't teach them the Constitution. I'm talking with my nephew, who's in the ninth grade. He doesn't know anything about George Washington. He wasn't even sure who he was. He didn't know who Jefferson was. He didn't know who Benjamin Franklin was, John Adams, none of these people. Didn't know any of those things, and he's in the ninth grade. I knew that. When I was in early grammar school, I knew who George Washington was in third grade. As a matter of fact, I very specifically remember third grade, and I knew who those people were. But they don't in our schools. But anyway, we connect this all together, okay? We now have, with the sheriffs exercising their oaths, and we the people working through the grand jury and the trial juries free, untainted, with the understanding of jury nullification, and working with the committeemen in every election district, the educational flow going down to the people would be tremendous and quick. And that, of course, is our goal. We have a lot of ideas on the website, what the website would look like in those days, you know, laying out every election across America, what their purpose is, getting rid of the politics and getting rid of the facts. And I don't want to get into that right now, but we do have a pretty in-depth plan for that. But go ahead. I don't know how we could use it with the mail, though. I wanted to bring that up because it was an opportunity to explain some of the vision that we've always had from day one since we started National Liberty Alliance going into for the court system. But go ahead.
Okay, so I guess in closing here, Mike's comments out, because I want to share the space with other people and hear what they have to say. I want to thank you for the time, but I also would like to bring up the issue of choice of law in commercial lending agreements, and the reason why I bring it up is because it's kind of a principle or a doctrine which serves to preserve the rights of the autonomous parties, right, the anonymity, basically, of people. And what essentially I see us doing in the as we form the jural assemblies and jural societies is that we're actually doing a choice of law, and there's got to be a choice of law clause somewhere. Do you think it's enough to just have these recordings and say, oh yeah, I'm down with NLA and therefore that's my choice of law? The idea is, you see, we're choosing the common law as a venue, you know, and so that choice of law and jury nullification are going to go hand in hand. Without the understanding of choice of law, we're not going to really, and see, if you really think about it, it is a commercial agreement when you're doing it with your local constituency, right, because of the tithing factor and the fact that we're supporting the government. You know, when you tithe in, you're giving up some liberty to get some freedom, right? So, and anyways, it is a commercial lending agreement, or not a lending, but it's a commercial social compact. There's some commercial aspects to the social compact, which I think gives rise to choice of law arguments on behalf of NLA and its members, you know,
well,
that work in our favor.
I'm not too sure I understand what you're saying about choice of law, but if I do understand what you're saying, I'd like to make a comment on what I think, to first off. You know, there
sure,
are
thanks.
Administrative courts, and administrative courts can make decisions on things that people have come together and agreed upon in some fashion, but consciously agreed upon, not suckered into agreeing or tricked into agreeing, but consciously agreed to. for instance, again, administrative courts, they do not have the power to fine, nor do they have the power to incarcerate. Okay, they don't have those powers. But if there's some kind of a collective agreement and people are participating and have agreed to participate through an administrative process, just like you could do without, instead of going to court, you can agree to do it to arbitration. And when I was a contractor, I've agreed to arbitration by the engineers. And all sides agreed to that. As a matter of fact, the general contractors' contracts and the developers and the builders' contracts all tied together, the AGC, if I remember it was called, the Association of General Contractors, and also AIA, the Association of it's with the architects and the engineers. But anyway, in all of those contracts, they set up a process of arbitration. So if someone violates the contract, they can deal with their arbitration through the process of having the engineer, hear both sides and make a decision. It's an arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that person is very well qualified, okay, to be able to do that. If you feel that the engineer is biased because the developer who you're up against is paying that engineer, then you can get an engineer from a different firm. It doesn't matter. But they come in and make the decision, and usually it's a good decision because they understand the construction process, they understand
mm-hmm.
the rules and all of the laws ultimately that were put together for that process. You know, that kind of a thing. You see, you come to an agreement and you're sold into that agreement. Once you sign the agreement to go into arbitration, it's binding. It cannot be overturned. I mean, if you unfold something
right.
to change the direction, that's fine, but it's binding. It cannot be overturned.
But, John, I'm applying that process to the common law, to the common law.
But you know,
so we have to...
That's where I'm leading to. You see, there, we are in different courts by trickery. Okay, we're expecting to go to courts of justice. I've always expected to go to a court of justice before I understood these things, and I scratched my head often not understanding why justice wasn't applied. Okay, it's because I was sold off into another system without my knowledge, without my consent. I was suckered into it, and then you find out there's no way to get around it. They've suckered you in unless you come together as we've come together and force the process as we're forcing the process. You can't get around it. It's almost difficult. It's very difficult. There are ways you can put the judge's flesh on the line, and because he knows it's a game, and if he understands it, you know it's a game, and you use their language in their sandbox, so to speak, as you're bringing them over into your sandbox, and you can shake up the judge, and the judge will force the right thing to happen, usually behind the scenes, and I've seen that happen to myself and to others. But it's a matter of playing the chess game. Why should we have to play the chess game to get into a court of record? You know, we shouldn't have to. There should be no town courts. There should be no city, except for with the exception of the big cities, Philadelphia, New York City. They're really county courts anyway, but or state courts, however you want to call them. But, you know, these city courts, these town courts, the village courts, all of these courts on that level, they're all administrative. They have no power or authority to fine and incarcerate, yet they do. Why?
Because that is argumentable, but...
The sheriffs take them. Well, I'll tell you right now, if it wasn't for their process of code violations and going out making their money, you wouldn't find a town court or a city court or a village court in your town or village because there would be no money to fund it. Okay, and they'd have to fund the police force with it. Then they'll get some money from the tax process, a little from the state, a little from the county, maybe even some federal money and so on and so forth. But a bulk of their money, they have to be producing. Okay, and they produce that through writing code violations. And that's what it's all about.
Okay.
And when they no longer can write a code violation because the person could just send a letter into the court, I'm not complying, take me out of this. I never agreed to this. Then it has to be taken out. And everybody starts doing that. Nobody's going to come into the court to give them their money, and the whole system is going to fall apart. Then we'll get back to the county sheriff and potentially the state police. And that would be the only thing up there left. I don't really know how lawful the state police are. I'd have to think about, and they too are making a lot of their money and funding on highways, you know, mugging people along the side of the road with code violations. So you remove that,
mm-hmm.
how long are they going to stay within the process? It'll be all state.
Right, right.
Look at the law enforcement belongs to the sheriff. That's my opinion. I don't know of any, you know, if people want to hire a private police force in their own communities, that's fine. It's still overseen by the sheriff on the high end anyway. But
so
all
the
of
last,
these courts are unconstitutional. There is nothing to choose. And
John,
that's my argument.
I understand you have research backing your claim, and I honor all of your achievements. Okay, as a general, that's my position, because I think you're well educated as well as others on the call. But here's the last quote from the article that I was reading regarding the choice of law. And it states that as a general rule, it is said that contracting parties may, by agreement, specify what law is to control their contract if enforcement of the contract by a local court in accordance with the foreign law agreed to be controlling, right, does not result in an evasion of the settled public policy or a statute of the state of the forum protecting its citizens. So I do find some problems with the choice of law. So as you were talking, I was doing some reading, and so I did find, you know, some sort of issue there because of the authorization by state, by statute, which doesn't necessarily always have to be asserted when you're dealing with pure common law, right?
Well, look, if you're going to have some kind of an administrator set up, you're going to have to have some kind of statutory process set up to control it and make the rules and the laws. But the key is people have to sign into that, and they have to be conscious of that. You can't pull people into a town court or a village court on a traffic violation or for putting a sign up that's too big or whatever it is that they're trying to say that you're doing without saying first, would you like to join our club, and this is what our club is all about, and then we're going to make decisions on how you live your life, how you cut your lawn, what you do. Would you like that? Hell no. Who's going to sign up for that? And look, at on the commercial end of things, all of these processes that people are getting caught up into the commercial process when they go into the federal court, it's being done without their permission, without their knowledge, and guess what? That's fraud. We don't even have to argue those points. We don't have to try to choose. We said, just leave me alone. I want to go to a court of law. That's where I'm going. And a court of law runs according to the process of the common law and the law of the land. I want the Constitution, and I want the law of the land, and which ultimately, you know,
but
the law of the land is common law.
I heard, John, okay, yes, for the civil authorities. That's why I'm asking you, if you said, a lot of people say that the Constitution does not apply to them, John, because they're free inhabitants, and they, you know, that's for because they know the limitation that it places on the government. It does not apply to you and me as private people. Now, are you taking the same position
on people who say that the Constitution doesn't apply to them?
Yeah, do you?
Well,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
The Constitution does not apply to me. Okay,
right.
I wrote the Constitution. We, the people, ordained and established the Constitution for the government, for these people. We're above the Constitution. They're under the Constitution. They're controlled by the Constitution. So
okay.
The Constitution isn't... I'm not under the Constitution.
So you have no constitutional guarantees?
I have unalienable rights that are guaranteed by the Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution, and that's telling them, not me. I already know what my rights are. That's telling them... Don't screw around with my rights. This is my rights. You leave me alone. I have a right to free speech. I have a right to carry a weapon. I have a right to due process. I have all these rights. And so the law is for them, not for me. People have the ability to not exercise their rights and defend their rights. That's silliness. But they can't lose their rights. They can't give their rights away. They can't sell it. They can't give it away. They can't do it. They still have them and can pick them up at any point in time when they realize how dumb I am for not applying my rights to the government and saying, get out of my bedroom. Get out of my living room. Just leave me alone. Get off my lawn. Stop sending me your stupid letters. I don't want to be bothered. Don't give me a ticket because I'm not coming. You see, that's where we got to get to, and that's what our rights protect. Us against them.
Well, also, if you were organized under the common law organization at the township level is straight up a subdivision of the county. When you're operating and
organized under the king, though, the king God has this whole process set up. He's in the court.
Right.
Look, if we are the king's,
but we're trying to get jury trials and authentication of the verdict thereof, right?
Yeah, but the point is that if you go in there giving them any power or authority by recognizing and acknowledging and permitting them to continue to go out and violate people without their knowledge and bring them into these courts of injustice, jurisdictions unknown, and don't even explain it to them and expect them to obey it, all of that is fraud. We're just encouraging them to continue. No, I say put them in jail. They're frauds. Don't come and tell me that I'm underneath something that I'm not. Don't play your trick saying because I said I'm a U.S. citizen, therefore I'm under this, or if I put zip codes on my mail. Don't tell me any of these things because it's all a bunch of BS, and it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, and I'm under the common law, and that's what the law of the land says in Article 6. You just bring them right there, and that's the law of the land. That's where we're at. Now, any of the commercial realms, with the administrative processes of the commercial realms, that's a whole different story where people get in. Look, if you're a truck driver and you're riding the roads, you're beating the hell out of the roads and you're making money on the roads, so it makes sense there's a certain tax process there. It makes sense that there's a certain weight limit. Because, and we've given Congress the authority to make the necessary statutory process to control that. But don't take it outside of that, which is what they've done. They've taken it right up to we, the people, to control our behavior. No, you can't do that. You see, it's all fraud. I'm not in the commercial system, and I'm not driving trucks or doing other commercial business that we've given the authority of Congress to write the necessary statutory processes for. I'm not an elected individual, which we gave the right of Congress to write statutes and to make codes, and also even the administration can make their own rules and regulations, which are called codes, that they have to follow. And it's right. We've given them the power and the authority to do that. But when they overstep beyond that, or they try to stick the people underneath that, that's a crime.
Well, here's the thing. How much of the taxation scheme of the U.S. and the states is associated with commerce? Because everyone does it via consent most of the time, right? They want to tax, you know, to pay their fair share. So
well,
is there commerce being done there?
Share.
So is it
–
Yeah.
My fair share commercially, so to speak, when I go out on the roads. Is
but is it commercial is my question, sir. I just want to make sure that you understand my question. Is there a commercial connection to paying the tax?
A commercial? For what tax?
State tax?
There are certain taxes that are legal, okay? Let's take the tax on gas, okay? That tax is very illegal. That money is supposed to be paying for our highways, our bridges, and all that stuff to upkeep and so on and so forth. And that controls the process of being able to travel around. Okay. Now I don't know if you noticed. Okay. And this, I think this is probably legal. I wouldn't argue against it. But if you noticed that once the hurricane hit down south in Texas, and then it got hit again over in Florida. Gasoline just sprung up way high. Goodness, we're up 60, 70 cents here since these two hurricanes hit. Well, I realize, wait a second, that is up there to help fund that problem, that process. And I wouldn't argue that. I'm happy to pay that extra 60 cents a gallon knowing where it's going, okay, understanding what it's for. Now, is it lawful? Have we written it into the law? Can it be written into the law? Can it be put? Absolutely. And it's I don't know, again, the state has their tax, the federal government has their tax, you know, and so on. But, you know, there's lawful taxes and there's unlawful tax. Anything that you put into a commercial process, in other words, attach it to something that you're going to go outside to do, not something that you do every day because you eat, you earn a dollar, pay your overhead cost of living and all these other things. You can't tax that. That's not taxable stuff. Leave me alone. But I go out and buy a new car. That's taxable. I understand that. And that money goes in order to support. It's supposed to be going in order to support, whatever it is that the state or the federal government is using that tax money for legally. And again, it should be found within the Constitution to give them the basic authority. Then it should be laid out in statutory process in order that it logically is seen and the money goes to the right places. All too often, funds for all kinds of things are misappropriated and goes to the wrong place. We see that all the time. That's a crime. Anybody who thinks 1 cent, let me say this loud and clear. Anybody that thinks that 1 cent of what you pay in income tax goes to anything concerning support of any government structure or anything, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you, because that's all profit to them. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't use some of that money as payoffs. They'll send some money down to the sheriff so they can get control of him. They'll send some money over here and over there. If you comply, we'll fund you. You don't comply, we're not going to fund you. You know, that's a way of control. So they do use that money for that. But again, is it real money that they're really doing? It's all digits put up in a bank. I don't even know. You know, they make it illegal to carry large sums of money. You walk around with $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 in your pocket or in your car, and a cop finds it, he's going to seize it. And he's going to say, until you can prove that this is income that came to you, and then the IRS will be there for the income side of things, and just goes on and on and on and on. Okay, all that's illegal. It's It's disgusting, to be honest with you. Anyway, did we lose you?
No, I'm right here. I just wanted to thank you, and I think I yield the mic. I appreciate
hey,
all of your time.
That's a good call, though. I appreciate it. Brent, you got the mic. Go right ahead. You should have just piped in if you wanted to, but go ahead.
I'll talk whether anyone can hear me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. We can hear
oh,
you.
Oh, okay. I have trouble getting in. I hadn't told you this, but I can't get on in on the host side so I can control my mic the way I did at one time. But sometimes I can, sometimes I can't.
Well, I'll tell you what, we were talking about that kind of a problem and other problems with people getting in and things going with this, platform that we're using. We're going to be looking for another platform, I think. I've been thinking of going back to TalkShoe. I always liked TalkShoe. We had a lot of interference when we left it way back when, but we had used it for quite some time, and it was pretty good. We may go back there, but we're going to find a different place because I'm not happy with this format that we have and this process.
Well, I'll do the best I can in the meantime, wait to hear from you. I can get along. One time I couldn't get in at all, but I'm okay now, so we'll get started.
Right. Well, you were the last person in the queue, so let's continue. We're going to move to you, and you have something to share with us. Let me just introduce you. This is Brent Winters. He is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com. And Brent comes on to teach us something. You're in the Declaration of Independence, aren't you?
Yes. Excuse me. Yes, I am. Declaration of Independence, we're going through it. Thank you very much. We're talking about just going through it blow by blow and clause by clause. And then, of course, the things I say here may or may not be the opinions and positions of National Liberty Alliance, but they're mine. And I appreciate the opportunity to pass them along. I spend my time looking into things, and I come to conclusions, and my conclusions, I like to call them studied conclusions, for take them for what they're worth. I talked to a young, handsome, sharp-looking and acting and thinking Mexican boy. I say boy, I think he told me he was 19. He wasn't a great big fella. He wasn't a little tiny fella. He's just a sharp-looking fella. And I asked him, I said, well, I know you say you're Mexican, but truth is, you grew up here in the States, didn't you? I could tell by the way he talked. He said, yeah, I did. I said, what are you doing now? He said, well, I'm a student at a university. I was out west traveling not too long ago. And I said, well, how did your family get here? He said, well, my dad came here when I was really little. Where'd he come from? Well, the place down north of Mexico City. I said, what'd he do? Oh, he grew up on a ranch that had a big orchard on it, and hay, we raised hay and the orchard crops and cattle. And I said, well, is your granddad still down there? Oh, yeah, he's still down there. I said, he's still farming? Oh, sure, he's farming. I said, well, why did your father leave? And when he left, why did he come here? Did he know somebody? Oh, yeah, he said, two of his brothers already in California when he came here, and he came up to be with them. I said, well, again, why did he leave? He said, oh, you can work hard down there. And my granddad, the family had land, but we couldn't make much. You couldn't get ahead. And so my father wanted greater opportunities, and he said, it's nice here that way. I said, yeah, it is, comparatively speaking, to other places. But I said, I want to ask you a question. Now, you're a young, inquisitive fella, and you're going to school and trying to learn something. Are we Americans up here, and including you, you're an American now, are we better than those folks on the other side of the Rio Grande? Is that why we have more prosperity here? And it's clear as crystal we do. And he said, no, I don't think we're any better than those folk down there. I said, I don't either. And I said, I don't think that we ever have been, and I don't think we ever will be. But then what is the difference? He said, oh, it's the corruption down there. It's so much worse. I said, oh, that may be true, but that just begs the question. What's different that there's more corruption there than there is here? He said, well, I don't know. I never thought of that. I just know there's a lot more, and I thought that was the reason. I said, well, that's just a symptom to a deeper problem. There has to be a difference. There has to be something behind that causes or allows that corruption happen worse there than it happens here. Of course, it's bad here, I know. It's worse there. And I said, do you think it has anything to do with people's point of view? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, a long time ago, back in the year 1824, down in Mexico, Mexico adopted substantially the same constitution we have. It wasn't just exactly the same, but many of the phrases were taken from our constitution and translated into Spanish and put into that constitution, and the Mexicans have ever since called it the Mexican Constitution of 1824. But for some reason, I said, and it's true, the Mexicans never paid any attention to it. They never used their constitution, which was similar to ours, the Constitution of 1824. That was in 1824 when they put it in place. And by 1835, about 25,000 American settlers moved into what was the province of Mexico called Texas. About 25,000 over a period of time, but I mean around the year 1835, during the 1830s. And they did it in reliance on the Mexican government's promise to observe the limits of the Mexican Constitution of 1824. So they went down there. Well, it didn't take long. They discovered that the Mexican government acted like they didn't even know they had a Constitution of 1824. And all of the things that it said were just words, just lifeless words on paper. He said, is that right? I said, yeah, that's right. And that's just a matter of fact. What's the difference? Well, he and I talked about it a while, and he agreed with me that the reason for that fundamentally is because the Mexican people have a different religious point of view and a different God than Americans. A critical mass of Americans have a different God. And our God is a God that promulgates, supports the principles of the Constitution of the United States. He didn't write it. I'm not like the Mormons. I don't say that the Constitution of the United States is equivalent and an inspiration to the Bible itself. That's their teaching, officially. That's not true. But the Constitution of the United States reflects God's point of view of government. That's right. It's all there, right down to separation of powers, legislative, executive, judicial, independent judiciary, the use of the jury, which is a common law institution. We talk about our Constitution, and we talk about, and I'm using this as an analogy, we talk about the Bible. And I know people that scream and holler and jump up and down and have for years about how much they believe the Bible to be true. And the only thing you ever hear them, or even the preacher where they go to church, and the only thing they ever say is, we believe the Bible, and they teach classes about it, and they push the idea that the Bible is the all that ends all, but they don't have a clue what's in it. They never teach it. They never really talk about the Bible itself. Why? Because they don't give a care. That's why. It doesn't mean anything to them. It's just nice to have something to say they believe in. People talk about our Constitution of the United States. Oh, it's nice to have something to believe in. People want to say, I'm committed to this. Why? I mean, even the Mexicans at least were consistent. They believed in a dictatorship in their heart of hearts. They're Roman Catholic to the core, most all of them, not all of them, but certainly the great majority of them. And they believed in a dictatorship sitting over in Rome. So it was easy for them to accept a dictatorship in the government of their country. And they did. And the Constitution that they put in place, thinking, oh, got all excited about it, they just sat there. It didn't mean nothing. Still doesn't. Is our Constitution of the United States that way? I say to many people, it is. Of course it is. Any law that you claim, or anybody claims to believe, is good law, as long as it is on the external of you, it will be your destruction. I don't care what it is. The law of God himself, it will be your destruction. But if that law becomes internal, not objective, but subjective, it becomes part of who you are, then it will be your life. the Constitution of the United States and the Bible, by the way, for most people, is wholly, or are, I should use the plural, both of them, are wholly external to most all people. Even if they want to believe it, it's external. It's on the outside. And the Bible puts it this way, just to make the principle, it talks about being written on the heart. The day will come, said the prophet Jeremiah, when my law, L-A-W, my Torah, the revelation of my will be written on the fleshy parts of your hearts, not upon tablets of stone like they were delivered to Moses. Does that mean on tablets of stone they aren't true? No, they're true. But there must be that transition in order for it to have a change among a people. It has to be, it must become, the true law must become internal. That's the difference. And that's why we see young people, I saw them today, it's crazy, with the equivalent of bones in their noses, their ears with large hoops in them stretching the skin out, tattoos on their faces. And you say, well, that's not all that bad. Well, no, I didn't say that was all that bad, but that's certainly a sign of a problem. It's just a sign. It's not the problem. It's a sign of a problem of lawlessness. Just a sign. It gets much worse than that. Oh, I know. And we can see the murder and the mayhem of the Clinton administration, the Bushes. We see our armies traveling the world slaughtering innocent people who haven't done anything to us. And then we go to slaughter innocent people on the behalf of other people who are too much cowardly or lazy or stupid to do their own warring, so we do it for them. We shed our blood, spend our money, and they're evil people on top of it, and we're doing their bidding, and they're inside of our government controlling us and collecting our taxes and sitting on our benches and running our universities and our seminaries, and on the madness goes. Has it ever been any different? No, it's never been any different, but it's never been as bad either. It's bad. Islam, the evil empire, Romanism, Phariseeism closes in on us. And our Constitution of the United States is out there. It's not a matter of the common law. Our Constitution is a brief common law government. I'm not the only one that said that. The Supreme Court of the United States has said it on more than one occasion. It's common law, that's true. But our common law is not a list of laws. Our common law is a way of life. It's a mindset. It is a headedness. It's a passion. And if that passion is not inside of a person, he won't have it. Freedom only comes with true law from the true lawgiver, the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, the laws of nature is God written in the Bible. And it only comes through hard discipline. How do I define discipline? Dailiness. Discipline is dailiness. You brush your teeth. Daily. You take a shower. Daily. I hope you do anyway. You'll feel better if you do. And all of the other good things in life that we have come through discipline. The simple things about life that make life more pleasant, that bring freedom, are discipline. If we're disciplined to learn our common law, and I do believe, I think the Bible teaches it, of course, I see it, that our common law, and our Constitution is a brief of common law government, our common law is a jumping-off point for men to learn the more particular revelation of God, as William Blackstone puts it in his commentaries of the Laws of England. The more particular revelation of God being the laws written, the lex scripta, the Bible itself, as he puts it. That's the laws of nature's God. The laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, the laws of nature's God, written in the Bible. Particular. And the final rule of faith and practice. And the digging in point is our common law, the way things are, and they will not change as we look about us. The law and nature we're talking about. Our Declaration of 76, paragraph 9, as we move through it. He, that is King George III, has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. Raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. I'm going to camp on that one. The others are important. We face the same problems today having to do with the same subjects, preventing the population of these states. That's the way he starts this clause, paragraph 9, and ends it, raising the conditions of new appropriation of lands. The population of these states is the population of appropriation of lands. This is tied together tightly. I was recently, as I'd mentioned, out west. I wasn't even in the Northwest. I was headed northwest, from south of the Northwest. And before I even got close, the sky was hazy. I said, boy, it must be humid. Stopped to get fuel. Man said, that's not humidity. The man said, it's smoke. I said, where's it coming from? He said, the Northwest. I said, it's clear down here? He said, oh, yeah. The further I drove, the thicker it got, to where it laid deep in the low places, even on the high plains of Wyoming. And there aren't many trees in Wyoming, by the way. But that smoke was clear down there, and the people were complaining. You know what I heard them say? I heard them cuss the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management. Cuss them. Why? Because they won't let people on the land. That's why. And they claim that all of that land, millions and millions of acres, belong to the federal government. Never did, really. They claim that. They push it, and they're not taking care of it. It's filled with trash, dead wood. They won't even let people come in. They got what they call out west wood cops. Won't let you come in and cut firewood without a permit. Always trying to milk people for money. So what do we get? Forest fires. Millions of acres burning, endangering homes. And if you're like the Hammonds, you try to put up a fire berm to stop the fire on public land from burning your houses and barns, then they send you to prison for 5 years. That's what happened to them. If the wide open lands were done like the land in Indiana, Illinois, Texas, Nebraska, Kansas, all of the eastern seaboard states, if it were all Tennessee, Kentucky, if it were all put into private hands, that would very seldom ever happen. The fires like that. Why? Well, because the private owners would take care of their land, keep it cleaned up. They would have incentive to do so. Their land. But what belongs to everybody belongs to nobody. That's BLM land. Nobody takes care of it. It's just trashed. I grew up in a place where, and still around there some, the Shawnee National Forest is. It wasn't a national forest until Roosevelt. A beautiful place. And I used to know people that had farms down in those low mountainous, low rolling hill areas. Nobody lives there now, but they had beautiful farms down there. And that was a beautiful place. That was before my time, but I've talked to people that used to live down in there. Then tell me how wonderful it was and show me pictures of the farmsteads. And now it's nothing but a tangled mess of worthless land. What belongs to everybody belongs to nobody. Appropriations, it says here, preventing the population of lands. Underlying all of our common law tradition is the law of the land, or as Magna Carta calls it, lex terra, land law. Law of the land. And because the roots of our common law are in land, because the roots of it are in land, property rights and land use are important to us. And they should be important to everybody. Because everything we have arises out of the land. Well, that's why we call it the law of the land. And the law of the land is not a list of laws. As I said a while ago, it's not a list of laws. No, it's a way. W-A-Y, a way of living. Because our common law grew out of the land, among folk that lived on the land, its principles are foremost seen in the individual's lordship, that is, stewardship over land. I'm commenting on paragraph 9 of our Declaration of 76. A man's rights and property, and his property and those rights is what our common law is all about. Rights and property and those rights. By contrast, the law of the city that besets us today, under different labels, all the same, administrative law, admiralty law, bureaucratic law, besets us. The law of the city is not about lordship over land, it's about lordship, lording it over, I should say, lording it over people. Making your living, thinking you're making your living by skinning the other fellow, not by worrying your wealth from the dirt. And when I say that, I don't mean you have to be a farmer or a miner. No. There are a lot of people in this world that contribute to the domination, the Lord, mankind's lordship of the land because of what they do. We all do, by the way, pretty much. If we're working folk that add labor to product, we're creating a demand for material from the land and encouraging the domination of the land and the wise use of the land. But if our mindset is to skin the other fella, to cheat and rob and steal, whether it appears lawful or unlawful, we're part of the evil empire. But our dominating force, our dominating power, our dominating energy should not be toward other men. Jesus Christ said, do not be as the nations whose leading men seek to dominate other men. That's what he said. What was he referring to? He's referring to the first few chapters of Genesis, where our grandpa Adam was told to dominate the land and take lordship over it. That's what he was referring to. That's our job, not to dominate other people, not to lord it over other people, but to lord it over God's creation for his glory and our benefit. That's the fundamental of all of the laws of nature. The laws of nature is God, our common law, unwritten in the nature of things, and our laws of nature is God, written in the Bible. The civil law-minded government, the law of the city as opposed to the law of the land, will permit entry onto uninhabited land only when it can dominate those entering that land. That's why the policy of the evil empire is to get people off of land. That's why Russia, the USSR, set up commune farms and moved all the people on the land into the cities and bust them out to farm the land and bust them back. That's why China's building cities and trying to populate them after they build them. Get people off the land. The government wants the land, but when they get it, they don't know what to do with it. Because all they want to do, the government wants to dominate men. That's what taxation is all about, dominating men. In fact, the word territory comes from the civil law tradition, the law of the city, the Code of Justinian. Territory. It signifies that land area over which Rome, the city of Rome, extended her terror. That's the territory. Terror? Yeah, among men, because it's all about dominating men. And civil law government dominates and controls through terrorism, the inciting of fear among others against or of government itself. Well, in common law, any government that tries to bar or hinder habitation and profitable use of that country, such as our BLM land, uninhabited and dormant land, flies in the face of God. I'll repeat that one. Any government that tries to bar or hinder habitation and profitable use of that country's uninhabited and dormant land flies in the face of God. It's not what God wants. God told our grandpa, be fruitful, multiply, fill the land. Take lordship over it. So what they do, they built a city. They called it Babylon. They said, let's build a tower so everybody will have something to look up to and stay here altogether. What did God do? He went down and scattered them so they would fulfill his will. Land is God's blessing to mankind, and by it he can live, and without it, every man will die. He has to. He is dependent, whether he wants to be or not, on land, whether he acknowledges it or not. Those that live in cities are dependent upon land. All of us are. We live on the land. Even in the city, we live on the land. We get our water from the land. and God wills that his uninhabited earth or land be always open to entry and good stewardship, because the land and its wealth are his. They're his. What does that mean? That means he is the allodial landlord. Allodial. Someone asked about this a few months back, and I said I'd get to it. I haven't. I'll mention it now. Allodial. What is allodial title to land? The only allodial title to land is in the maker of land himself, God himself, the creator, the lawgiver. He has the allodial title to all land. What does that word allodial mean? Well, simply put, it means that to have allodial title means that whoever has allodial title owes nobody nothing. Is that something we can say of any man, that he owes nobody nothing? No, every man owes a duty to his maker. And when it comes to land, if you rent a house, you have lordship over land. If you own a house, have title to it, you have lordship over land, over a piece of land, a parcel of real estate. But that land is the fundamental of our law of the land, the fundamental of all law, that land that you have lordship over in such a case. Even if you're a renter, you have rights of property. If you have that, you owe a duty to the allodial landlord, the one who owes nothing to nobody. That's what allodial means. It's an old Scandinavian word, by the way. It's part of our common law. The Teutonic tribe, the Germanic and Scandinavian tribes, their law, they called it the Volkrecht, among other things. They used the jury. It is our common law. It was a way of life to them. It wasn't written on paper anywhere. How do I know? Because they didn't know how to write and read. That wasn't part of their lives. Although they didn't have runes, if a fellow knew how to make a few letters, they thought that he was a law talker. That's what they called them. Allodials from that ancient time. Now, there have been men that have claimed to be allodial land owners. William the Conqueror conquered England in 1066. His descendant, Queen Elizabeth, sits on the throne today. She is one of his daughters. He was called William the Bastard because his parents never married. He's a rough character. But he said he was allodial landlord of all of England. That's what he said. And then he divided the land up among about 200 of his military generals that had come with him when they invaded from the Normandy coast. And he said, you all owe me X number of fully trained and equipped knights per year, depending upon how much land I've given to each of you. And he divided all of England into 200 parts, gave it to them. And then those fellows in turn turned around and divided it any way they wanted to other men. They said, you owe me. Because they knew they had a duty to fulfill to William. They said, you owe me so I can fulfill my duty to the king. So you've got King William, and you have those 200 fellows that he parceled all the land of England out to, and then those fellows in turn parceled it out to whoever they wanted in whatever amounts they wanted, and there was no end, and still isn't, theoretically, to how many times any piece of land can be parceled out. Clear on down. And everybody owed going uphill, see, taxes of some kind of a duty. Could even have been a personal duty. Right down to a very, 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 very little small tract of land. I'm one of the few people in the world that own land, farmland. I own farmland that Abraham Lincoln owned. As a matter of fact, it's the only farm that Abraham Lincoln ever owned was a 20-acre tract right by the tract where his mother, his stepmother, and his father owned. And that tract is being farmed now. It's not part of the farm where his father on Gooseneck Prairie grew up. Well, I own some of that land in that 20-acre piece, a cousin of his, by the name of Hall Farm. It was deeded over to me as a gift when I ran for office, when I ran for Congress. I sold it, that land that was deeded over to me, I sold it by the square inch to raise money to run for office. and made quite a splash. Sold quite a bit of it, but I retained most of it still yet, because all of it of which I sold, I even gave deeds to the square inches and to be recorded at the courthouse. But I don't know anybody that bought one of those square inches for $50 that ever recorded a deed, and so it's still all mine, and I still pay taxes on it every year. It's not very big. I think the taxes on it, well, I won't tell you what they are, but I'll bet I pay the smallest amount of taxes of any parcel real estate in 17 counties. It's very small. It's just 10,000 inches or some crazy thing. And there's nothing there but weeds. And no, I said that farm's still farm. They don't farm what I own. It's just filled with weeds. I try to keep the brush down off of it. It's just a little patch. That's the way the land of England. It was divided up and divided up and divided up and divided up, smaller and smaller and smaller. And the smallest landholder down here, who was a Billeen, they called him, he was a peasant. But he had his little piece of land, and when he defended his little piece of land, he defended the king's land, the allodial, well, he called himself the allodial owner. You see, but they were connected. And when the king defended his rights in land, whose rights did he defend? The property rights of that fellow way down there that just had that little five-acre tract. And anybody else in between that defended the rights of the land and the law of the land defended the king's land and the Villeen's land. See how they were tied together? It was a very ingenious system. It was feudal to a great degree. But it paints a picture of how God parcels out land. And the king of England is not God, obviously. He claimed something that wasn't his to claim. I don't know if he claimed allegiance to God or not. I don't know that he ever wrote anything down that ever would ever make us think one way or the other. But that's what allodial means. Ultimately, the only allodial landlord is God himself. And land's important to God. That's why the Declaration of 76 makes so much of land. That's why our Constitution uses the phrase law of the land. The reason they do that is because to the maker of all things, the lawgiver, the true lawgiver, who has made all of the land and all of the heavens, when he made man and put him on the land and gave him a parcel of real estate called the Garden of Eden, he told him to protect it, guard it. The Hebrew word, shamer, means to guard actively, violently if necessary. He didn't do it. He let evil weasel in. And what happened? God threw him off the land. Because the law of the land said you've got to, the landlord, the allodial landlord, said you've got to keep my conditions of land tenancy. And you didn't do that. I gave you one simple condition and you high-handedly, knowingly, violated it. You're out of here. And he threw him off. Do we expect that God will be any different to us today? Well, he feels so strongly about land, he applied the Sabbath principle to the land. He said, you let the land lay fallow every 7 years and rest. He applied it then to the crowning of his creation, mankind, that's us. We're supposed to rest every 7 days. That was what he said. It's in the Ten Commandments, the ten simple commandments, the fundamental commandments. And then, but before that, he applied the Sabbath principle to himself. He only applied the Sabbath principle to himself. He rested on the seventh day. He applied it to the crowning of his creation, mankind, who he put here to take care of the land, by the way. And then he applied it to the land. That tells me, he didn't apply it to anything else, just those three persons and things. That tells me that the land's very important to him, and you find out it's true, and he tells his people, Israel, if you violate my conditions of land tenancy and you persist at it, my land, as it were, will vomit you out. Do you think he's going to be any different with us? I don't think so. I think it's important that we understand the law of the land. What is the law of the land? It is our common law, the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God. Now, don't make it too complicated, though. Because all of the law of God, the law of the land, those two volumes, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, can be categorized under 10 headings. We call those 10 headings today the law, the 10 commandments. Yep, those are the 10 headings. And those 10 headings were delivered and given and placed into God's land deed to his people as a prototype of all land deeds, a book called Deuteronomy. And all of the book of Deuteronomy after chapter 5 were those 10, after he described the property using the meets and bounds method, and he does the recitals, describes the property, then he recites the conditions of land tenancy. We call them the Ten Commandments in rapid fire. And that's in chapter 5. And then he spends the rest of the book, the majority of the book, expounding those 10 conditions of land tenancy in order, using statutes, commandments, and judgments, as the Bible puts it. That's where we are. We're here on the land. And the land of Israel is a prototype of all land, all this terrestrial thing we call earth. And God is precious to all of him. And we better be busy thinking about it that way. It's his land. He is the allodial owner, the landlord. Well, this is Brent Allen Winters, and the website is commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. You can go there and listen to the free MP3 clips and find things there to read. In the meantime, I'm back to you, John. Thank you so much for letting me talk for a little bit.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Appreciate that. All right, we're back to Q&A. We do have the Q&A box still open, so if anybody's got a question or a comment, there were a few people in there. They seem to have fallen out, so there's no one in there right now. Star 6 to get into the Q&A. And if you have any questions for Brent or general questions or questions for me, feel free to come into the queue, star 6, and ask them. Or if you want to make a comment or a suggestion. And very importantly, when we started out earlier tonight on our program talking about the Sheriff's Project, anybody got any ideas on that, any suggestions, anything supporting the idea, feel free to comment. Oh, and again, just to make a note, we will be having a meeting on this Thursday, at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's 2 in the afternoon, Eastern Standard Time, here in this room, where we'll be starting to form committees to start working this project and collecting ideas and getting this project off the ground so that we can educate our sheriffs, give them the necessary knowledge and education that's necessary to perform their duties and keep America safe. Okay, let's take our first person in the queue. We do have a couple people. Again, star 6 to get into the queue. Let's go to, is that Aline? A-L-L-E-N-E. I think that's Aline. Am I pronouncing that right? You got the mic. Larkin, 206 number. You've been unmuted. Last four digits, so your phone is 1-2.
Oh, sorry, I was on mute on my phone. Yes, this is Allie. Aline was my given name by my Norwegian grandmother.
Gotcha. Go right ahead, Allie. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, well, it's really great to be on this call this evening and hear all of the wonderful things that I've heard, and I so appreciate the words that Brent has just given us. And, you know, especially about, you know, the nature of God is written in the Bible. Well, you know, I would like to add that his intentions were put into the water. And, you know, it's really all about safe, clean water and safe, clean energy for all of us, because it's water and energy that sustains all living things, right down, you know, to the cells, even in the blood cells in our, or the cells in our blood in our body. And I think that, you know, the Creator, he gave us these things, and what we're fighting back is to give these things. Because that's how we live more in balance with each other, because only when we have those things do we have peace in the world. So the other thing that I really want to bring attention to is when I was an elected official, and this is when I really started doing my due diligence and investigating things, and it began in 2006 with water fluoridation, and that was the day my life changed, because I found out how corrupt our government really was. But then, you know, it went on to smart meters and cell towers and geoengineering. But then it also went on to what is known as, are you familiar with the CAFR scam?
Yep.
It's where trillions of dollars from our Public Works Trust Fund has gone, and they call it the CAFR scam because it's using the comprehensive annual financial reports. You know, I even took my evidence of this to the acting state auditor when I was an elected official, and she told me that if I thought these investments they could only audit what was legal, and if I thought they were unethical, I should talk to my legislators. Well, my greatest instructor about this CAFR scam is Walter Burian. His website is CAFR, CAFR1.com, and there's lots of good statistical facts there, and I found that in Washington State, it's into the billions of dollars that are invested in BlackRock, an investment company on Wall Street, and how they were able to make these investments legal. But, you know, when you cross the United States and realize this is happening in every state, it's into the trillions. So we have money. We just need to get
absolutely.
It back.
You know, when we wrote the writ of quo warranto, which we did on May 13, 2015, and we served that writ on every elected individual on a federal level. We served it on all governors. We served it on all of the judges in the state level. We did actually also file it and give a copy to eventually to even all the officials, as many as we can get to, on the state level. Through either faxing or email, and even both. The intentions behind the writ quo warranto deals with the CAFA. You know, where are you going to get justice? How are people going to be remedied? How are we going to fix the problems that they have created? And the answer is right there in the CAFA. And so our very first document we filed was a writ of quo warranto for that sole purpose. It sits, and we did file it in our court case here back in December of 2016. I think it was December 14th, or we might have filed our first group of papers, and then maybe a couple of weeks later we filed the writ quo warranto again and served it upon a servant government. So. And all this money that you're talking about is in investment. It's in land and all kinds of different things that we can eventually liquidate and do something with. And yeah, in the CAFA funds alone, we probably have enough to pay the national debt. But you know what? That's not we the people's debt. That debt belongs to the Federal Reserve, which has nothing to do with we the people. It's just a bunch of criminals.
But it's our money they took.
Well, that is true.
You know, that's why our schools, our bridges, our infrastructures, and everything are in bad shape, because we didn't invest it with state banks back into our communities. They invested it in Wall Street.
Right. Well, you see, my point.
Now, the other thing that I want to just say in closing here.
Hang on a second, Allie, hang on, and I'll let you talk more. My point, though, mainly on this idea of the national debt, which I don't know is how many trillions of dollars. I think it's $19 trillion, if I remember, somewhere around there.
Almost 20.
Yeah, we don't owe that debt. We the people should have no intentions of paying that debt at all. Let them go after the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the people that own the Federal Reserve. Let them go after them, because we had no contract with that. That was all fraud. We were robbed. We the people were robbed. But the other side of the coin is that there is a huge amount of property and assets that is we can identify through the CAFA. There are on every county there is a list of all of the properties and assets owned under the CAFA, and it amounts in I'm sure in the trillions of dollars. I don't know if anybody's really worked out a number. We have looked at some of the states and some of the counties and some of the amounts. It's just unbelievable, the amount of money. And these people have robbed it for their own services, for their own welfare. A lot of
those factual statistics are on Walter Burian's website, CAFR1.com.
So that was CAFR1.com?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to go look at that.
Yeah, for a comprehensive annual financial reports, CARF1.com. And it has those statistics in all the states and all of it. It's just incredible the research that he has put together and what he has done.
Did you say CARF or CAFR?
Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports.
Okay, CAFR. Okay. That's what I thought you originally said. Right.
Yeah. So it's to the first letter of those words. Now, the other thing was, just before I got on this call, I began watching a video, just the first bit of it, that Judicial Watch presents, exposing the deep state. And this was a special educational panel on Friday, September 15th, 2017, discussing the deep state. Dr. Sebastian Gorka, former deputy assistant to the president, author, New York Times bestseller, Defeating Jihad, The Winnable War. Diana West, journalist, author of American Betrayal, Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. Todd Shepard, investigative reporter. Washington Examiner, James Peterson, senior attorney at Judicial Watch, moderated by Quistam J. Farrell. It's very interesting because this is one of the things after I began in investigating how things were happening, not only in my city, but the big cities around me, and found the UN Agenda 21. I also found what they called the shadow government or the deep state. And now this to come up, and I'm going to be sending you, John, this a link to this posting that was streamed live on September 15th, 2017 by Judicial Watch.
Okay. Yeah, what year? 2017 or 16? 2017, right?
17. This just happened.
All right. Yeah, I wrote some notes on that. So if I went out to the out to YouTube and put in Judicial Watch on a deep state, I probably should.
Yeah. If you just go onto YouTube to do, well, it doesn't show that it's on YouTube.
Pop a link, and I'll be looking for that too, just in case I can't find the very particular.
Yeah, but it's Judicial Watch presents exposing the deep state.
How long is that video roughly? Do you know? An hour, hour and a half?
57 minutes, 56 seconds.
Okay, 1 hour. All right, that's it.
Yeah, and so I only watched about the first 10 or 15 minutes of it because I wanted to get on this call.
Right.
And I'm so glad I did. This has just been an excellent call. I'm just so full of gratitude for the work that you're doing.
We appreciate that. I definitely will take a look at that, and I probably will post it up on our website, that particular video. So it sounds like something that we, the people, need to know about. And I really hope that everybody works with us. I'd love to get thousands of people if I could, but I'd be happy in 100, 200 people working on this project for the sheriff. So this is, I think...
Yes, and I must apologize to you because now that I have done my careers, my public service, my volunteer service, I'm free at last, and I am wearing so many hats that, I don't have time to get really deeply involved, but I like to stay in the loop with all of these wonderful things that are happening. But what I am most involved in with right now is what I'm doing with Josh DeSoul and Cal Washington in the InPowerMovement.com, and that's about stopping the smart meters, and how I'm also working to achieve no Wi-Fi in schools, working with Sabine El-Jamal on GenerationZapped.com. And I'm going to be putting together private and public showings of that documentary that's been 4 years in the making that will be available next month. We just released the trailer on it over Labor Day.
Is that going to be posted up on YouTube also?
Yeah, there's been all kinds of links that I've been posting on YouTube about both of those things.
Okay, but I mean, once the video is ready to be released, it's going to be also YouTube.
It won't be because... I don't know how it's going to be. The documentary is done, but it won't be released until October, and I'm just waiting to get the details on that and work for the agreement that I signed to be able to host private and public showings here in Western Washington.
All right, sounds good. Give us a breast on that.
But with the empowermovement.com, that is up, and we are using the notices of liability. I'm part of one of the seed groups that has been with this since 2014, using this process against those in Seattle that are rolling out the smart meters, and we're sharing the documents on how everyone can use this notice of liability process throughout the United States online.
All right. Well, we appreciate all that information, and we're looking forward to get more as time goes on then. Okay?
Okay, and thank you again, and I yield.
Thank you, Ali. Okay, let's go to Constance in Connecticut.
Hi, this is Connie from Connecticut. What is the name of the lady? Good.
That was Ali. You want to try to make contact with her?
I do.
If you don't have a problem, we've never had a problem with this. If you wanted to put your phone number out there for her, she's still on. She'll write it down and maybe give you a call tomorrow if that's what you want to do. Or you can get a hold of Jan tomorrow. You can find him under our directory. He's the national coordinator. You'll find him towards the top of the page on a directory. Just click on directory, and Jan has her information. But if you want to give your phone number, go
right ahead. I'll give my number. I've given my number many times on conference calls, conference calls. So it's 860-303-1854. I'm in Connecticut.
Repeat that number one more time slowly. Go ahead.
860-303-1854.
Okay.
And I have a question. I haven't been on any NLA calls in a long time, but is there anything being said or done about the chemtrails? Because there's a lot of evidence that there's pathogens being sprayed in the chemtrails.
There's a lot of stuff. We intend on doing something with that eventually. We do have some information. We're gathering more. We did a 9/11 report, which we filed into the courts for purpose of a grand jury hearing on it and consideration of some indictments. We haven't revealed individuals' names there yet, but we have put something together for everybody to take a look at. So anybody that's planning on sitting on the grand jury in the very near future, when I say very near, probably months, but in the near future, concerning the 9/11, to be able to really make an educated decision and an informed decision on the 9/11 situation, you should be going through that material now, because it's going to take some time to go through all that material. We have reams of stuff out there, lots of videos to watch, and this is all done by the engineers. We also put together one on Lavoie Finnegan, which I'm not sure, I don't think we've actually filed that one yet. And there was a third one that we were putting together. We eventually will do something on the chemtrails. We do know a few months back there are pictures of President Trump and he's moving to stop that. But there seems to be some bureaucracy there that it's going to continue to at least to a certain point. I'm not sure exactly the story on that, but we do know that he's on that. It's very dangerous, it's poisonous, it's destructive. They're experimenting, and they're trying to do a few things with it.
Yeah, well, they're destroying my property by hitting me with biofilm. It's glue with organisms. They coat my walls, the outside of my house. They destroyed my car. I mean, I'm very outspoken because I became EMF sensitive at the FDA. I no longer work for the FDA. I did submit whistleblower complaints. They fail to recognize it. They know EMF causes cancer. So more importantly than all this NSA spying and all this other stuff and ill surveillance, but they're radiating us, and they know it causes cancer. Their own employees are becoming electrically sensitive, and they have EMF-sensitive office space available for people like me. That's what I was told. And so, you know, they're trying to give, and they're using the Obama Brain Initiative. I have like 50 to 100 drones above my house on most nights. They're blinking their lights. They know I'm EMF sensitive because I put it, I paint it. I paint it on my driveway, my oil tank, everything. So I'm making it known I'm electrically sensitive. So now they're hitting me with chemical and biological weapons. And I even went to the Eastline police, and I talked to an officer from 4 to 5 o'clock on Memorial Day. I had glue hanging off of my face that I was trying to get off, and I had organisms coming out of the glue on my face. They do this all the time. They're like chemists from afar. They spray this clear liquid. They can make it liquid. It vaporizes. They do white particulates. People across the country are finding these white particulates. It's water activated, and then it bonds with the skin or any surface, and there's organisms, biological organisms in these nanoparticulates, and I have information on that. So, anyway.
Well, if you do you have it in documented form, this information?
I have some of it in documented form, but I did get a scan, and I have been microchipped from head to toe without my consent and knowledge, and I have 7 satellite frequencies being directed at me in the cell phone range. I am proceeding with a group that helps identify frequency allocation and, you know, to further investigate.
If you've got any documents that are documenting anything particularly concerning this problem or any other problem, really, with the environment and the destruction of our environment, you know, get a hold of Jen and see if you can't get him that information, and he'll get it to me, and we'll add it to our collection of information and data that we're going to be using when we start some indictments in that area. Also, I'll just take
I would urge people to watch a YouTube video. It's called Vaccines Forced on the Masses via Chemtrails Geoengineering. It's only 19 minutes, but it's very, very revealing.
Can you repeat that again?
It's called Vaccines Forced on the Masses via Chemtrails Geoengineering. So they're trying to get people to get vaccinations, and if you don't go for a vaccination, they're going to spray it in they spray it in the sky. So we're getting it one way or another.
Well,
but
yeah, these people are evil. You know, I'd like to tell everybody, take this opportunity, this moment, to talk a little bit about health, just for a minute or two. We have a lot of information on our website for health, you know, whether it be cancer or even heart disease or anything. Anybody that has any kind of a health problem, you really should go to our page under news. Go to our site, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight the news on the blue bar, and when you get the drop-down box, there are two places you want to go. One is you'll see heart disease and cancer. That's a really fascinating page. We've got about 4 or 5 videos up on there concerning heart disease and cancer. And what you could do about it, you can literally turn a lot of this stuff around depending on how far into this you are. Also, if you go to the same place under news and you come down to today's issues, highlight today's issues underneath the news, and you'll come to health issues. Click on health issues, and you'll get a page with a huge number of videos and information and documents on all kinds of diseases. Most of these diseases, as a matter of fact, all of these diseases, there are cures for them. Again, it depends on how far in. I mean, if an organ is pretty well destroyed, it may not be reversible. But as long as you aren't at that point, there is a chance of healing. Vitamin C, which you'll get a lot of information on under heart disease and cancer, is huge on dealing with people with problems with heart disease problems and also cancer. We also have a committee that works. What's the name of that committee, Jen? Is it a health committee or
natural health?
Natural health. So we have a natural health committee that meets. So if you have any medical issues or concerns, or you want to make sure that you know, you can get ahead of things. You know, I take a lot of vitamins and supplements. I take a lot of them. I mean, a lot. I eat a lot of plastic every morning. With a fruit juice, I take berries, strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, just all these berries, and throw a banana in it and a little bit of water, and create a drink, and it's a very healthy drink, but I use that thick drink to be able to take down all of these vitamins and supplements that I take every single morning. What I have discovered is that pretty much any issue, if you have a particular problem, if you write the problem in Google and click on vitamins and supplements for, okay, hardening of the arteries, vitamins and supplements for, and hardening of the arteries, not only do you have to do chemically, also exercise is important with this stuff. All of this stuff, you need to do some exercise every day. And you don't have to do much. I only do about 20 minutes a day, but I do it every day. In any event, you put in your whatever your symptom is, vitamins and supplements for whatever your symptoms is. My right eye lid was starting to go down. It's been down, you know, halfway, and it covers half of my eye. It's been like that for years. I thought it was from an injury. It turns out it was a certain muscles that are just failing, and it's just not working right. I found a vitamin for it. I forget the name of what it's called, something with an M. But anyway, I found a vitamin for that, and if you take this certain vitamin, you have to pump up the vitamins, take what you need to start out, what they tell you in the bottle, and then maybe add and build it up to where it starts to work to help your symptoms. But literally, that symptom has totally disappeared since I've been taking my vitamins dealing with that particular problem. But just about any issue you have, vitamins and supplements will help it. Vitamin C is huge. It's one of the best things you can put into the body. It fills up your immune system hugely. You can turn a lot of things around. Cancer can be cured with mega doses of vitamin C, and there's a process and a plan for it. We have a lot of videos on how to do that. Or you can even go ask your doctor to get intravenous, introduction of vitamin C if you have cancer, and a whole bunch of other things. But anyway, anybody with health problems should get into the health committee, work with them, and these pages will help you tremendously. You'll be blown away by what's available out there just on the natural scene to deal with problems. The pharmaceutical companies will never cure anything. They're not interested in that. They just want to treat the symptom and keep you coming and take your money. Anyway, back to the caller.
So the last thing that I want to say is I urge others to look up emfblues.com because they have quite a few articles on and papers on all the health effects of all these cell towers and the radiation that we're being exposed to.
What is that again?
Edward Mary Frank Blues, Blues, .com. And,
okay, the third letter I missed, so EMF?
F as in Frank.
Okay, gotcha. EMF Blues, Blues, .com. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. And they have quite a bit of information on the damaging effects of this, and so does EMF Scientist, not plural, .org.
Scientist.
Yeah, because the doctor who diagnosed me as EMF sensitive in Maryland said that my cancer was probably due to overexposure to electromagnetic radiation, which is non-ionizing radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're all being bombarded by this through the meters, through the towers, the technology in the cars, our own appliances. They truly are radiating and spraying us like bugs.
Yeah, it's really disturbing, very disturbing, and the GMOs in our food and fluoride in our water, and it just, the list goes on and on and on. They're just destroying us all over the place, and It's a horror show.
Right. So I asked about the chemtrails because I heard Trump might stop the chemtrails, and that could be the biggest help, because what is explained in the video is that some of the pathogens that are being sprayed in the chemtrails bond easily with lung tissue. So you'll see people with a lot of breathing issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, exactly. And we got to realize, you know, Trump can only do so many things so quick. It's going to take him a while to deal with these big problems. And we can deal with these big problems once we're empowered in the court. We can end them all very, very quickly. Literally, overnight, we can change the face of America when we become successful as getting into these courts as the grand jury and the indictments start to go through and things will change dramatically. And we are that happening to us. If the president works to empower us, which is one of our potential plans that might happen, and we are communicating with him, if he is able to empower us and get us into the courts by pressing the Attorney General, particularly to make sure the law is adhered to and applied, the reverse would happen, and we'd be empowering the president hugely, very quickly, in a dramatic way that would assist him in doing what he wants to do and needs to be done light speed. It'll happen very quickly. But again, breaking through the veil here, either for us to do it or for him to do it, is a difficult job. It's going to take time. But hopefully we are close to the time when that happens. Okay, I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take our next caller. We only have a couple of callers left, so we'll try to get them all. It's a 203 Connecticut number, I think, 203-0445. You got the mic. You've been unmuted. Connecticut 203.
Yes, thank you, John. It's Edward from Connecticut.
Hey, how you doing, Ed? Good to hear.
Good. Oh, thank you, John. Yeah, I'm sorry you weren't able to get Crystal. I know Crystal was in the queue, and then
yeah, I know last week we lost her also, but we have spoken with her on the phone recently, and we also I saw her recently, and I have that she had sent. But go ahead.
Oh yeah, thank you, John. Yeah, it's something that come up with. Just to show how ridiculous they are as far as the way that they're going after people. As you know, in the tax foreclosures, they just go ahead and they do their foreclosure, but they actually have another foreclosure running parallel to it, that they actually, someone else that buys a lien, then they're foreclosing on it. And I think something like that, I mean, it's so unprecedented that I don't even think it's covered. Because I'm just saying, just common sense would say you can't have two tax foreclosures on the same property. But what they're doing, because the cities are selling the lien, say the first tax foreclosure, will say whatever, it could be a 2012 lien or something, or 2013 lien, and they start that foreclosure. Then another company will buy, say, a 2015 lien, and then they start a complete separate foreclosure. Instead of all they'd have to do is just add themselves as a party in the first action. So,
all of that is an additional crime. You know, it's monetizing, and they're monetizing anyway, but that's what it is. And of course, as we know, tax foreclosures is a violation of our unalienable rights of property to begin with. You can't tax property. The tax foreclosure in itself, they usually do it in a process called in rem, but I have heard about what you're talking about, where they actually lien and sell the lien. And again, I've seen that in a couple of different other things, the people doing that, and I'm just like blown away that they're getting away at that next step of breaking the law. But anyone involved in the purchasing and dealing with that monetizing from the, you know, taking it from the, for instance, from the tax level and taking it into the private sector in order to make the collection from a private individual, they just became really put themselves on a huge risk against anyone who understands the process of being sued and beaten up and all kinds of stuff. And you have more of a chance to win against an individual who has purchased that lien than you do up against the going against the county who is trying to do the foreclosure in the name of the towns and villages and so on. But it's just a huge, money-making machine, just more fraud, a big crime. And they usually take your property in a process called in rem. They can't respond. We've done show causes on these, and they can't respond. They don't respond. They can't respond. the application applying this defaults is really the next thing we're pushing forward for. As soon as we can get this magistrate in our court case back on track to be obedient, or indict him potentially. We'll bring him up for indictment. I'm sure we probably will get an indictment and move for another magistrate. But anyway, go ahead, Ed.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, this, I don't think anybody on this call has ever seen where they would have two tax foreclosed on one property, because you have two actual separate cases.
Yeah, that's strange. Right?
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, this, I was able to pick this thing up. See, and this is what they're counting on, that no one's going to say anything. And what it,
well,
and the
have.
Purpose that, yeah, and the purpose of them doing that is that second company is then getting all these legal fees, where if they would just add themselves to the first foreclosure, they would have a priority lien on it. There's no reason. See, but the thing is, what I'm trying to do is come up with some type of, because they're going to appeal this. They already started it, and they're going to have to do a brief. Now, as you know, with the brief, you have to list something like a reference. So this is so unusual, I don't even know what could be referenced. Because, in other words, it's like I'm saying off the top of my head, I would say you can't have two tax foreclosures. But
how do I find that?
Yeah.
Even with the two tax foreclosures, which is a very interesting thing to look into, to see that kind of a conflict and how you might be able to handle that, that's something I'd have to give some thought. But nevertheless,
yeah.
They're coming from two different directions. Both directions are unlawful. You know, let's take the IRS and how they work. You know, it's unbelievable what they get away with. For instance, if they come out after you for a lien and you read the authority by which they act on, which you would think lawyers would do, okay? And I'm sure if they do, they tried to put it into the court case, the judge would fix that problem real quick. But, you know, those of us who are coming in as non-bar lawyers, coming in, you know, as our own person, we can bring these issues up, and it rocks the boat if you do. Look up the law they use to claim the authority. Look up the law. If you get a summons for the IRS, for instance, and you read through this, they'll tell you what the authority is. Their enforcement of summons is in their codes. And for instance, you'll go look under section 6420E, 6421, 7602. And 7604. If you were to run those laws down, you put them in Google, and you'll go to Cornell's website, and you'll get the law, okay? And you cut and paste that law and put it into a word processor, and then you go start dissecting that law, and if it wasn't such a pity and a crime, it's laughable. It's just unbelievable the wool that they're pulling over the people's eyes. You can stand in their court case, go into their sandbox, and raise those issues, bringing those laws up, and people will melt in that court case. The judge will want to get this out quick, you know. But why isn't this, you know, why don't lawyers see this, and why don't lawyers bring this up? I think it's laziness to begin with. They trust the government to begin with, that they're acting under a certain authority, and they just let that go. I think they're trained that way in school, maybe, you know. But me, I'm curious, and anything brought up against me or anybody that I'm helping out, I look at these things. I look at the law. I look at the numbers. I look up the – and you can see the reference referring from here to there. And you pull it all together, and then you start to see the fraud. It's just amazing that they're getting away with this. Just totally unbelievable. But it's the same thing here. They're operating in a process called in rem. Look up in rem, study it. We've got a lot of information in our court cases and on our website concerning in rem and the process thereof. And what I was blown away is how in rem has gotten into the law of the land. If you read the court rules, okay, and which I try to obey as much as I possibly can, you know, if it makes sense, fine. If it doesn't, then it's null and void. if it's repugnant. And believe me, a lot of the federal rules for the court is repugnant, okay, to our Constitution, repugnant to the common law. And but if you read through it, you start to see a weaving of the in rem process, which is brought down in part two of the rules of the court. I don't know whether it's called part two or part B or whatever, but I forget what it is. But it's a separation because there's the law of the land and there's the law of the sea. They deal with, you know, the law of the sea. And then they take the in rem process, which is found in the law of the sea, and they insert it from there through the magic of playing with words and burying it within, you know, statutes inside this process, not statutes, but rules inside this process. They bring in rem process right up into the law of the land. And then they play some really, really sneaky games there. They'll take the, for instance, they'll make the point that if you don't challenge the in rem process within 15 days after the first hearing, you're muted from bringing, you cannot bring it up anymore. It's just, you're in the game and it doesn't matter. Again, another fraud, of course. Where did they get the authority to make that kind of a rule? You know, I would call that a fraud on the court. And pull the judge in and make him a defendant and bring it into another case, you know, same case, same number, but in a, with another judge and go after that judge. But this is what they're doing. And but nobody's reading these things. Nobody's reading the statutes that they're bringing up, the statutes of authorities. They're not reading it. They're not just not reading it. U.S. 26 makes the point that U.S. Title 26 is not law. Wow. How come no one's read that before? You know, we've got that from, what's his name, Bill Thornton. You know, he shared that with us. It's you know, again, what are these lawyers doing? Of course, they if they discover it, they're going to be silenced real quick or they're going to lose their license.
Right, exactly. That's why this, calling any lawyers that are good defense lawyers for for the people. Exactly. Now, this one observation here, this particular case, it could be an incredible opportunity because it's showing an insult to injury. It's bad enough you have a, you know, one tax foreclosure, but then to show the ridiculousness of having another one running up unnecessary bills, because the first foreclosure takes care of everything. You see what I mean?
Right.
There's no.
But I'd like to see the verbiage and all that. Do you have a copy of these two cases and any case which shows both?
Yeah. It's a definite case, and
how many pages is it?
No, it's pretty straightforward because all they're doing is just they originally filed the case. You know, one company filed the original one, and then the second one is just filed like it's a normal case, like as if, you know, like there isn't anything.
Well,
you have the same language. Yeah.
If you get a chance, if you give me a copy of these two particular cases and drop it in the mail to me, but before you drop it in the mail, give me a call or catch me on the Monday night call. Let me know you're going to mail it to me because I'll look for it then. You know, anybody who sends big packages and things to read and stuff, and without talking to me first, and I don't read it because I get too much. I just can't do it. But
I know
it's coming my way. I'll look for it. But I am interested in read. I'd like to see these two cases side by side and see if I can't figure out, you know, how they're working the scam.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're just. Well, you're gonna see. They're just going straight forward like it's just a regular case, and just hoping no one's gonna say anything. Imagine the judges aren't saying anything. So
well,
imagine
nobody knows what to do. Nobody has, you know, the what would I call the prerequisitional positioning, if I may say that, of how to deal with these things. They don't have it, so you have to rely
That's
on a lawyer. And people are trained now to believe that they can't understand the law anyway. They don't have a degree, and it's too complex and all that other stuff. So they have to rely on a lawyer. But the lawyer has already been trained on how they're going to deal with that problem, assuming everything is all well in the
right.
law. But it's not.
Right.
Either that or they do look into it, and they start to bark in the courtroom, and the judge calls a hearing very quickly in the back room to make sure that this lawyer understands you know, what's going to happen to him if he continues down this road.
Right, and so what we're trying to do is just appeal the second one and just say that you can't have a second one, and that's the gist of it, to appeal the second foreclosure.
Right.
And just derail it. And like I said, if that could be won, that would be an incredible example. You know, it's like you've always said,
well,
all these little wins.
It doesn't matter how they come at you. There's no such thing as a non-judicial foreclosure. Every one of them violate your due process. You can't take away property or anything without due process. And as Brent had brought up earlier about the allodial titles and the law of the land and the way things are supposed to be, you can't tax property. You can't take people's property, especially not for a tax foreclosure. You know, you just can't do it. Mortgage foreclosures can't do it for other reasons. They just don't have the ability, the authority, the paperwork, the contractor, anything to do anything. So the only way they can possibly foreclose without the judge coming in and getting his hands dirty is just to run it through the process that the legislators have set up. And it runs its own course, and they just go from point A to point B to point C, and they just keep filing in the court. There's no judge really attending to it usually, and there's no signature in the end, and it happens, and then they throw you out as a tenant. It's just unbelievable. And then the sheriff comes in and doesn't have a clue. He's not educated enough, understanding enough, informed enough to understand the con job here that's going on. And this is the reason why we have to write this book. This is one of the things that would be in the book, is this particular con job. But we would do it very, very carefully, and not in a way that gets involved in conspiracy theories and things, which they are conspiracy theories, but we're not going to talk about that. We're just going to show the law and see, hey, sheriff, you see, this cannot happen. Look right here. You know, it's just happened. What words, what are they using? They're telling you to do something, and you're violating your oath, and you're breaking the law at the same time. You're injuring another individual. You've become part of the problem. You've become part of the conspiracy by doing this. Why are you doing this? Why not stand up for the people? Why not get educated and use the law of the land, the Constitution, which is part of the law of the land, and use this, Founding Fathers' words, United States Supreme Court rulings, use this to hold your position. Look, I'm not making this up. You tell the people from the sheriff's position, I'm not making this up. This is what, read it. Doesn't it not say this? Doesn't it not say that? Doesn't it not say the other thing? That's what I'm acting upon. Show me something to negate this, and I'll go forward with it. Other than that, you can't take this person's property. Well, go do a due process. Go and give them due process. Yeah, they can't do that because there's no way. There's nothing for them to do. They can't do it. So,
right, yeah.
But we got to get the sheriffs in on this. They got to come to an understanding of what's going on with property,
right?
Being taken by the people.
Yeah, just like years ago when James Trafficant stood up for the people in Youngstown, Ohio, when they wanted to foreclose on the miners that lost their jobs. He said no, he's not, because he was sheriff at the time. Then later he made it into Congress. But he said he's not going to foreclose. So it was a big media event. The governor had to come down. So that was a stand-up sheriff at that time. But I'll let you get back. And I did hear, of course, Brent talking about the allodial title. And so hopefully he could maybe one day, explain how people could do that, to have extra security and so forth.
Right. Well, yeah, really there's not much to do other than to change the records. But changing the records is a problem because you'll get resistance and you're going to have to fight it. We're going through that right now trying to change the title name and having to pay the taxes. It's ending up in federal court at this point. Because we have fraud on the court, we have a whole bunch of things, and this is a personal case I'm working with someone on, and hopefully we can be successful and move them off the tax rolls. There's a couple people involved in this case. We'll move them off the tax rolls, and it's property. It's not to be taxed. Okay, they get away with the taxing because they call it residential. that's the part of the trick. You want to be private property, you know, so that's really where you want to get to. Anyway.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you have that going, and it is in the court system, so that means there is hope. Well, excellent. Thank you, John, very much for your time.
Okay, Ed. Thanks for the call. We did have one other person. I guess they're gone. If they want to pop in, we'll take them on. But they were on earlier. I think it was it Peter from New York? Someone from New York. If you want to pop in the queue, we'll take you. If not, we're going to close down. Okay, I guess not. All right, with that, we're going to end our program tonight. We went a little over, but we started a little late anyway. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and please, everyone should get involved in this sheriff's campaign, even if you don't make it to the Thursday meeting, for whatever reason, maybe you're working, whatever, and you don't get involved in a deep way, you know, maybe just sharing this with people so people will go to the site once we set up the site and trying to help us to collect enough money to be able to get this project going. Look, at everything we're doing here is important, and I see this project with the sheriff as extremely important as with what we're doing. We need the sheriff to be educated and informed. So with that, have a good week. Lord willing, again, we'll see you next Monday. Thank you.